It's time for Twit. We have a great panel for you. Some of my dearest friends, Shira Lazar is back. She hasn't been here in ages. Alex Wilhelm is here from TechCrunch. Devendra Hardawar from Engadget. We're going to talk about Elon Musk and what's going on. TikTok. Is it finally TikTok's time? And Microsoft's Xbox Series X game stream. Should we watch it? It's all coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 769, recorded Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. Me, I'm on Unhinged. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Barracuda. Did you know 91% of cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at barracuda.com/twit. And by Mint Mobile. Right now, you can take advantage of the 15 plus 15 deal. $15 a month for a brand new iPhone SE and $15 a month for your Mint Mobile service. Cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news, which is going to be more and more of a challenge as these weeks go by. So we thought, you know, maybe there's not a lot of news, but I'm going to bring some of my favorite people and we'll just have a nice conversation. And actually, the last 45 minutes, that's all we've been doing. Then I started the recording. Here's Devendra Hardawar, senior editor at Engadget. He's quarantining in place in Brooklyn with an 18-month-old and his wife.
And boy.
Now, do you still get like phones, like the new, like the iPhone SE and stuff?
Does that? Oh yeah.
So you
yeah,
still
if
get
I
stuff.
Pan my chair a little, it's just boxes behind me, like a pile of boxes I'm hiding. Not really phones. I do a lot of computers. So yeah. over the last couple of weeks, I've reviewed like a computer or something every week. Or maybe those like there's still things. So
they're keeping you busy. Obviously, that's good.
I'm busy. Spent going to the office or something has been vacuumed up. Just writing more and doing more stuff, which is not great, but whatever. Like there's a lot of stuff to do. I'm trying not to stay bored and stay sane with the baby and my wife.
Yeah. Oh man, you have my sympathy. I'm trying to grow a ponytail.
Or a man. You can do it, I believe in you.
Yeah. Hey, wait. I hear a voice that sounds from my distant past. It sounds familiar. It's Shira Lazar. Hi, Shira. Gosh, I've missed you.
What's up? I am so happy to be here. This feels like a reunion. It's been way too long, and it's an honor. I love being here. It just feels like home again.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's why I thought it'd be nice to get together with old friends and kind of hobnob. Shira, of course, at What's Trending, but now has a new thing, PeaceInside.live. This is perfect for quarantine. It's a Zoom, a nightly Zoom where you meditate, you talk about philosophy. It's really great.
It's a live platform.
Do some yoga.
Around mindfulness, movement, and meditation. And we launched it because all of us were on Zoom. So we decided to launch these live Zoom classes. Actually, they're twice a day. They're morning and night. So you begin your day, end of your day. And then we have workshops on the weekend with facilitators from around the world. And it's very needed right now, but we're making it fully accessible. So right now it's free. It's donation based. So we want this to be accessible to everyone, no matter what your socioeconomic background is. And I'm really proud of it. It was a fun project we started in quarantine that's kind of taking on a life of its own right now. So all you have to do is go to the site, as you can see, peaceinside.live. You put in your email, or you could just sign up for classes and you put in your email to RSVP. And we actually send daily emails in the morning with the live class links to the Zooms, as well as like some inspiration and positivity for the day.
I'm not going to have to turn on the camera with me in my yoga pants, though, am I?
You know, you have a choice of whether to turn on the camera or not.
Oh, good.
But what's cool is there is interactivity. People are sharing at the beginning and after the sessions. Yeah, so it is much needed right now. You could, of course, do like Calm and all these on-demand things, but it creates a different type of space when you're interacting with the facilitator and with the community live and in real time.
Yeah, so it's like going to class. Except that we can do it with Zoom now, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Also joining us, my dear friend, Alex Wilhelm, who has gone through many career changes, all involving TechCrunch.
Yes. I think that's fair.
He is currently back at TechCrunch as a reporter. And I was so thrilled when I saw your byline, because the last time you were on, you said, I've got something, but I can't tell you. So I'm really pleased to see, because you've always done a great job. And you're still kind of covering the same beat, startups and finance and all that, right?
Yeah, that's the same goal. I'm paying a little bit more attention to actual tech itself because I've been covering companies in the fintech space, and that's forced me to kind of niche down on some product stuff. So I'm becoming slightly more techie.
You're also starting to talk a little more like a Bitcoin bro. I just want to warn you.
It's a slippery slope.
Yes. It really goes fast.
That's not fair. I'm sorry, Alex. Sorry.
What if I want to dig in on this for a second while we're on it. What have I done lately that's reminded you of being a Bitcoin bro? Because I need to cut that out, whatever it is. So tell me, what was the signal that I sent up?
Digging deep into fintech. There were a few phrases there.
No. Like fintech, like, you know, Chime, Robinhood, like companies that are working.
It's short for financial technology, I understand. And fintech is the accepted term. But if you start talking about drop shipping from Bali, I'm going to know that you're one of them, okay? I just want to warn you.
If that happens, you have the right and responsibility to slap me very hard in the face and remind me that I made fun of Bitcoin since 2013.
That's
right. I need to keep it up.
That's right. You are no Bitcoin bro.
Stay strong.
No, sir. We got to hold out.
So far. Have you reviewed the new Dell XPS 13? Because I'm really liking that.
I did.
That is my new favorite.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. It's weird how Dell has basically been making the best ultra portable for the last several years. And this one is just like, they still made it better because they got rid of that like little bit of bottom bezel that was there before. So there's no more Dell logo. It's just all screen.
No,
it's
more
very
up your nose cam.
No more up your nose cam. It's fast. Intel's new integrated graphics stuff is like not bad. It's not
totally
game worthy, but you could play like Overwatch in 720p. Yeah. It's doable.
I have, in fact, I'm going to do a hands-on tech comparing it to the new MacBook Air because the Air really began ultrabooks.
Yeah.
And this is, in my opinion, when you compare it to the current MacBook Air, this is really a much more evolved, much more seamless ultrabook experience than Apple even.
Definitely.
At this point.
Definitely. Great keyboard, great track, like everything.
Yep. Yep.
Everything's all good.
I got the developer edition, so I'm not running Windows on it, which is another blessing.
Hey,
it's all good.
hey, says Alex.
Some of us like Windows. I mean, like,
I really like
Windows.
Really?
I genuinely like Windows, yeah.
Oh, how can you like Windows? Shira, we don't like Windows, do we?
I am a Mac girl.
Yeah, no. I can't.
I'm an Apple.
You know what's not
good?
It's come a long way, but you know what's not good? It's Chrome OS. I have a Chromebook that I use for just kind of like on the couch internet, if you will. Mm-hmm. And things don't work quite as well as I'd hoped. I was hoping it was going to be really fast and snappy and kind of all the things you hope for. And it's just a bit slower than I anticipated. So that's been kind of
a letdown. Do you have a modern one, Alex, like a newish one or an older one?
Like the Samsung?
Yeah.
I think I bought the one that Wirecutter said to buy. So I bought it 2 months ago.
I think that's an Acer, right?
Yeah.
Asus, Acer, one of the two.
Acer, I think it's an Acer. That was the best, but I think these new Samsungs are actually really good. They're pricey. Mm. That's the only problem. They're $500.
Which is insane. Like, I love the idea of Chromebooks as like sub $500 computers.
Right.
So, like, just bare minimum, just getting a browser and like something that I can use to browse the web or something. At $500 and above, you just get a Windows PC. Like, it's fine. You can run Chrome and you could do so much other stuff too.
Right.
Yeah.
Or get a Linux PC. I'm just doing this to annoy people because my hair is long and I look like, pretty soon I'm going to have a neck beard. It's just, I'm going to look like one of those guys. So I might as well.
Why don't you cut your own hair? Get Lisa to cut your hair.
Is that what you would do now? Sure. Are you cutting your hair?
No, I'm actually growing mine because mine was a very short. But I did dye my hair myself for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, why am I paying $150 for a hairstylist to dye my hair?
So you would be all gray if you didn't dye it.
No, but I was not all gray, but I was seeing a lot of gray.
Were you getting some gray? You're too young to have any gray.
No. I take it from my dad's side of the family. They have the grays. My mom doesn't. So I got it from his side.
Yep. You get your dad's hair.
How dare his
family. How dare he? That's what they're saying, is that all of a sudden we're going to know what all these people's natural hair color is because it's starting to grow out. But you can dye it. You can dye it yourself.
Yeah.
You get some beet juice. And a comb.
That's natural. If you want to go natural.
And a comb, and you just comb it through. I think I won't be dyeing my hair, but I do need a haircut. So my wife wants to cut my hair.
Just let her do it.
Well, this is what gives me a little less confidence. She says, look, I cut my own bangs. That I don't think cutting your bangs, it's not, you just go like that.
No, bangs are actually so hard. Bangs are, if you see any kids or anyone who tries to cut their bangs, you end up cutting it like sometimes here or jagged. That's actually the hard thing to cut.
So that resume, that's good. That would be, okay, you can cut my hair.
I think just go for it. What do you have to lose? It's going to be a fun experience.
I'll tell you what I have to lose. Yeah. I have to lose 3 months of looking like a bozo because I have a bad haircut. At least this, it's long.
Is this Little Home on the Prairie or is this This Week in Tech? I'm so confused.
Well, Alex, who's been cutting your hair, Alex?
My wife since college.
Yeah.
We all need to choose our Mad Max.
Yeah, why don't you do a buzz cut?
I had a buzz cut. In fact, my wedding pictures, I had shaved my head for charity, for UNICEF, back in 2000, whatever. And it's terrible. It's a bad look. I have a bad
We're
head.
We're all going to need our Mad Max haircuts. Yeah. So, you know, it's all going to be buzz cuts for all of us.
I feel like if I cut my hair, I would lose respect. People would say, oh, look, he's getting a haircut. I should look as ragged as raggedy ass as everybody else does right now.
Exactly. You need to be accessible, Leo.
I'm accessible. Speaking of raggedy ass, Elon Musk, this isn't exactly
perfect.
A text.
Perfect transition.
Yeah, this isn't exactly a text story, but he tweets, Free America Now. That's not as bad as then he tweets, you know, Elon, the Tesla stock prices are too high, in my opinion, wiping $14 billion off his value. I talked to some people, said, hey, at least he's an honest CEO.
No,
sure. Alex, no,
it's not a defense. That's not a defense. Being very dumb when thousands of people work for you. It's not a reasonable defense. It's stupid. This was a reckless tweet. And like, look, I'm all for dumb posts on Twitter. That's like half my job. But this is just silly. Like Tesla is not a small company anymore. It's not an experiment. It's a, you know, international company with billions of dollars in revenue, tens of thousands of employees, hundreds of thousands of customers. Come on, get your to get stuff together and, you know, stop behaving like a petulant 12-year-old on a sugar rush.
33.4 million followers. When he tweeted that, not only did Tesla's stock price tumble, his own value went, he lost $3 billion in personal wealth. It's kind of amazing that somebody would have $3 billion to lose.
Yeah, it's a bit irresponsible. I think what Alex said, like he can be an egomaniac. I think he does. He approaches things with in extremes or with an extreme perspective. And sometimes he looks at himself as that he has so many unique opinions and perspectives, which he does. And that's why he's built what he has without thinking about where he's at right now and all the other people that rely on him, right? And so he needs to find that balance between being his eccentric self and like an eccentric leader and then actually being someone who's going to like be practical and in a place of reality.
Yeah, he is a real CEO at a real company now, as you say, Alex, who has a lot of employees. By the way, did he not do something similar in 2018? And was he not fined by the Securities and Exchange Commission and ordered that if he were to tweet any market-moving tweets, he would have to clear it?
Yes.
So is he in violation of that?
There's nuance to that, but I think you're referring to the infamous like funding secured $420 per share thing.
Yeah. Anytime you see 420 in any of Elon's tweets, don't take them seriously.
Just if Elon tweets, don't take it seriously. In fact, don't follow Elon. It's like you don't have to follow Trump on Twitter. People will just show you his tweets.
Right.
That's a lot like Elon's Twitter account.
If he says anything interesting, you'll see it in the Wall Street Journal.
People will bring it to your attention, or CNBC will put it in a red banner on top of the site. Elon's not doing very good, and it's very good fun to make fun of him because it's always good fun to make fun of rich people.
Or something, honestly.
I think he might he's a bit off, and I think it's easy to make fun of it, but there's also that fine balance from like the audience perspective or experts or just like all of us who are reporting about this.
Walk a mile in my shoes. He tweets on Friday, my girlfriend Grimes is mad at me. And then follows that up with, I'm selling almost all physical possessions, will own no house, which, by the way, got 253,000 likes on Twitter.
Here's the thing that we've all noticed, because every single one of us has at least tens of thousands of Twitter followers. When you have that many Twitter followers, if you tweet out like spaghetti, people will interact with it. If you have tens of millions of Twitter followers, you can tweet out anything and it just has a huge impact. So Elon's just crap posting on Twitter, to use a family friendly version.
Is it crap posting? Is that what it is? Honestly, I worry about him, to be honest. I worry that he's having a breakdown of some kind.
Usually if there's no filter, you're either like in a place where you need to express yourself so badly and you need that attention and validation, slash you don't know the boundaries between like your life and the outside world.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. But I look at him and I also see like the Godzilla made up of like all of the, this is tech culture. You know, he is the superhero, PayPal mafia guy. He almost went bankrupt trying to make Tesla and SpaceX happen. He did this. He pushed electric cars forward, but it's like, he clearly doesn't have a decent sense of self, of who he is, to understand his role right now, and kind of everything he says has consequences. I don't know who said it. I keep seeing the tweets, but like he is the dumbest smart person around right now. And it's sad. It's truly sad.
Well, it is, because I honestly hero worshipped Elon for a long time. I had a Tesla.
Everyone did. Yeah.
I thought he single-handedly made electric vehicles not only cool, but made them possible. And I think that's been very good for the planet. I actually am a little worried about him, or I don't know what to think. I'm not mad at him.
Yeah, it's worse than this, though, because we're all looking at his tweets right now and saying this guy's wilding out on Twitter.com, which is bad. But during their last earnings call, and if you haven't read Tesla's last earnings report and you want to get confused, go ahead and give it a read. During the Q&A session with analysts, if I recall this correctly, he also kind of lost it a little bit and was talking about the closures of the country and how people should be free and just some stuff that was, again, not the sober-minded commentary we expect.
His COVID tweets have actually been counterproductive. They've not been good.
Yes.
But when you're that brilliant, I feel like in one part of your life, I feel like your emotional social intelligence might be off.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
And also, if you're a billionaire, F. Scott Fitzgerald said it. He said, the rich are not like you and me. You live in a different world if you're a billionaire. Nobody says boo to you.
Yeah, pretty much. And also, like, it does feel like he is a guy who the quarantine right now is not about social good for him. It's about work at Tesla stopping.
And costing him a lot, by the way, at the end of the month. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a company that has been struggling to build cars for a long, long time. So like any bump like this, given how much on the razor edge they've been for so long, this is bad for him and bad for Tesla. But he does not care about saving his people. He cares about saving his company.
Right. I can understand that.
And space travel, guys, we need to go to another
Mars thing.
Send him to Mars, please. Just go.
He also, after saying, I'm going to sell all my positions, I will not have a home. He says, one stipulation on sale. I own Gene Wilder's old house. It cannot. This is true, by the way. He does. It cannot be torn down or lose any of its soul.
It's very specific.
Just like. Yeah, Willy Wonka's factory in the basement.
Yeah,
apparently, like that makes sense for Elon Musk. Yeah,
honestly, I hope he's okay. Somebody said, Elon, just say you were hacked and move on.
The problem is, I bet he doesn't think he's wrong. I bet he thinks he's being right. Yes. And I bet he takes
Or funny, right? He thinks he's funny, too, I think.
Is this an attempt at humor? Is this supposed to be funny?
No, I think he's trying to push what it is to be a CEO founder. Like, most people don't do this because of corporate America.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Remake what this is, what's possible as like a leader. I'm going to be completely authentic. Fuck everything.
Okay. He is being authentic.
Fuck everything.
Yeah, it's okay. You can say bad words.
Also, he has a pregnant
Grimes
partner right
Grimes
now.
Grimes is pregnant.
Driving him crazy.
Yeah, in his 40,000 square foot Willy Wonka mansion.
There's a great station, right, guys?
As a woman, I'm not blaming it on the pregnant lady.
No, don't blame it on the pregnant lady.
Nope.
You could be a different kind of CEO. Right. And also not be the
that
CEO of Lowe's.
$14 billion in
right there. You don't have to. You can be not the CEO of Goldman Sachs, who's always very boring,
right,
and still not be totally crazy.
You could be John Ledger crazy.
Sure.
That would be okay. Sure. By the way, that's
perfectly,
where my hair is going.
Measured.
I think I'm getting John Ledger hair. That's what it is.
Oh, man. Just don't go all pink on us, please.
No, all the pink clothes.
Yeah. Seeing John Ledger, like, I was covering phones so much, like, as he came on to T-Mobile and everything, like, seeing him, it's a show. He's just putting on, right, you know, a circus show. Like, he is the buttoned-up AT&T guy, but his persona as a T-Mobile CEO.
We saw what he was doing before T-Mobile.
And, you know, he lived that life, and I think it was just a great performance for him at T-Mobile. So, yeah, that's a good example of, like, working within the boundaries. And they did do some really cool stuff at T-Mobile. It's some really boundary-breaking stuff there.
Here's his CEO's out there.
I was going to say, what CEO is out there that is, like, that balance between, like, is respectful of the corporate structure but also pushing the boundaries?
John's a good example. Who else? Is there anybody else? I never interview CEOs because they never say anything interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But there have been some. Jonathan Schwartz, when he was at Sun, was pretty outspoken. Actually, Sun's always had outspoken CEOs. Scott McNeely was pretty out there as well. CEO is the last person. It's like interviewing an athlete. I came to play. We play good. You know, there's never anything interesting.
And there's a difference between public and private companies, too. Like, I think of, like, Gabe Newell at Valve, right?
Gabe will say what he thinks. Yeah.
He is interesting, and he doesn't have to answer to anybody. Yeah. So, yeah, let him.
Because he's not public.
Go off and do his thing. Yeah. Yep.
Here's John Ledger's latest tweet. By the way, John not only resigned as CEO, and that was effective April 1st, I think. He just now left the board, so he has no association anymore with T-Mobile.
Wow.
But he says, this is his latest tweet. There he is, apparently riding a scooter in a T-Mobile shirt. So maybe
he's never going to give it up.
Yeah, maybe he does live this. So I was out today and somebody saw my closed helmet and Elliptigo, and that's the scooter. And they said, "Hey, do you work for T-Mobile?" And I said, "I run T-Mobile." "No, I don't. I just love T-Mobile."
Oh my God.
And he looked at me strangely and said, bye. I know, it's kind of sad when he's no longer associated.
He has the T on his back now. He has the Roger Stone back tattoo.
He has a T on his back?
Oh my God.
No, I'm saying he should.
He should.
That's what I imagined.
Roger Stone has Richard Nixon on his back.
Yeah. That picture reminds me a lot of Jason Newsted post-Metallica. And if you get that joke, 5 points to you. And I say that as a respectful fan of Jason Newsted, but like, if you're part of this thing that defines.
I used to be Metallica's bass player, and now.
It's tough.
I got nothing. That's how I'm going to feel when I retire. I actually often have this vivid imagination of me, a bum on the street, lying there saying something like, "I used to be a tech pundit."
You're never going to retire, Leo.
No.
You're going to die in that chair.
Yeah. You may remember me from the screensavers.
When we can upload digital consciousness to the cloud, like Amazon's upload, like you will be there having a tech show forever.
I want to go on record and say that I know there are out there a great many people who got into tech because when they were at formative age, they saw tech TV and they kind of got it in their brain. Maybe some of you have figured out how to put brains in a jar. I just want you to know that one great way to honor me would be to let me do that.
Yeah. brain upload.
Put your brain in a jar?
Actually, that's too easy.
Well, no.
I want to upload my brain to a machine. I don't want to be in a
jar.
You
don't want physical matter. Yeah.
Yes. No, you're right, John. My engineer, John, says, you don't want to be a brain in a jar. Yeah, that's too easy. I could do that now. No, I want to upload myself to the thing.
Would you be frozen and then have your consciousness uploaded so at least we could see?
No, get rid of the body. No body. Okay. I don't want the body. Just put me in a machine, preferably a machine sitting in this chair on this set doing the show.
Oh, my God.
And for all we know, that's already happened, and I just haven't received the memo yet.
Everything's already virtual. You don't even need a machine. You just need, a screen so we can just always see you and hear you. Yeah.
I'll be Max Headroom.
Yep.
Yep.
Who's the Bitcoin bro now?
Okay. Okay. Fair point. You got me.
I'm sure we'll solve digital consciousness before Bitcoin, by the way. Just saying.
Yeah, maybe. It takes less processor power. That's for sure.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
So one last thing on this Elon thing before we move on to something else. But I'm curious how people don't have friends. You know, how does Elon not have some people around him who could just take his phone and say, you're being a jackass. You're not going to tweet for a while. Give me that thing. You know, I've got friends around me who would sit me down and straighten me out. Leo, I'm sure you do too, you know, and everyone else here, Devinder, sure. How do you not have friends?
It's the Trump billionaire thing? It's the Trump problem of you're in such a spot and you're so rich and so successful on the surface where nobody will tell you no, and everybody around you is just trying to, you know, siphon off a bit of that success. So yeah, you don't have anybody who can actually tell you the truth.
That's kind of what I meant when I said billionaires. I think that's it's probably an occupational hazard of being that wealthy. That's why I don't think a billionaire should be president, because no one has ever said boo to them.
True. Right? And we're seeing that. We're seeing a fake million.
He's not really a billionaire, but he plays one on TV. So
yeah, exactly.
Pseudo-millionaire. Yeah.
It's Halloween 24/7 here in America.
Don't you think Grimes... Have you met Grimes? I bet you have, Shira.
I actually haven't, although she is Canadian and I'm from Montreal.
Yeah.
But but she's pretty out there too, creatively.
Yeah, she is.
As an artist.
Yeah, she is.
So I could see how they were into each other.
Yeah. I just feel like she would be the one who would say something, but probably she's egging him on.
Or I think he's just doing on his own. I don't know. I think he's making his own decision. And even someone took one phone away, he'd probably have other things to tweet. I mean, I think he's just he does his own thing because he's seen what doing his own thing does, the result of that, because it's created amazing things. So he can't differentiate between the amazing things and the things.
Well, and that's why I'm voting for him, because I do appreciate what he's done. And honestly, Starlink, which is I think the most important project yet, which will give us global high speed internet to every corner of the world. That's going to be transformative. Mm-hmm. We can see that now, because what would this be like without the internet? There are still half the world is not online. What if all the world were online? Alex, do you know anything about the current status? I think they've launched 90 or 120 satellites so far.
Yeah, they're launching a lot of satellites. I'm really excited about this project. It's something that I'm tracking out of the corner of my eye, because space tech, for lack of a better phrase in English, is super cool. Ooh, but you have to be pretty focused on it.
422 are up there.
There you go. As a very online person, regrettably, I'm a huge fan of this idea of having internet for everybody, fast internet.
Yes.
I love it. But here's my question. Elon is not doing satellites, rockets, cars, and solar panels at the same time, because he's one person and that's impossible. So why can't the people who are running those things run them? Why can't Elon just sit down for a couple months and get himself together? Because all the projects would grind forward well, right? I hope he's going
to
be okay.
You need to hit a low to unfortunately let go.
If this wasn't a low, the terrible earnings call, the deleted shareholder value, the complete failure of fiduciary duty. I mean, just go back in time to when he was smoking a blunt on Joe Rogan and got into a fight with the SEC. Get it together. People depend on you that work for you and drive your stuff. Come on, this is not acceptable. It's not middle school when it's cute and you get lunch detention. You're an adult, damn
it. He's acting like an eighth grader. You're exactly right.
Is that a crappy eighth grader?
I said 420.
Yeah, exactly. Weed.
Did he actually live through being a full on eighth grader?
Maybe not.
If he missed that part of his life, maybe he's just playing it out now.
Don't you think, sure, you get frozen at whatever part of your life you didn't complete so you could move on?
I know
plenty of. Or trauma can do it too.
Trauma, or if you didn't live through it, you're kind of playing it out all the time. You play it out until you learn the lesson.
Right. That's why I still have poopy diapers. I never got. No, I'm just kidding. Just I'm
too
just
much
kidding.
Too much.
I'm just kidding.
Is that why you have the big chair on set? That explains so much.
No. You never have to take bathroom breaks.
That's a terrible image. Yeah. I'm so sorry I brought that up. No,
I'm
potty trained. I am.
I forget who did the biography of him, by the way, but I like halfway read that. And his
Ashley,
family.
Vance, which is, and I interviewed Ashley about the thing. And you're right. His family life was odd.
His family's wild. And his father's insane. His grandfather's insane. So like he comes from a line of people of like boundary pushing folks doing crazy, crazy things. So it's like that is his upbringing. It's
you know,
crazy.
Steve Jobs, one of the things that made Steve Jobs, I think, so odd and so kind of anti-human was that he was raised by his adoptive parents pretty much from the beginning. You can do anything you want. You just can do anything you want because you're smarter than everybody else. The one time I spent any time with Steve, that just radiated off him. I'm the smartest guy in the room. And in fact, if he didn't deem you one of his, you know, well, you're okay, then he just ignored you. Didn't exist. Mm. I was somebody who didn't exist. And I think that's something in your upbringing. So maybe Elon just had a poor upbringing. And yet I'm glad that both Steve and Elon had the freedom, because what I see them in them is freedom. They were not constrained by what's possible, what you could do, what makes sense. They just did it. And that has given us a great gift in both cases. Admittedly, interpersonal relationships not ideal, but that's a huge gift.
It's a poor model, though, for a lot of people, because I think a lot of people see Steve Jobs, they see Elon, and they go, that's how successful people act. When it's how two people who are much smarter than you with a much larger resource base did some things. It's not something to be imitated.
I think in this new wave of entrepreneurs, my hope is that they can see that they could accomplish and do, but also while focus on being and compassion and empathy for others. And I think
that's my question. That's a good question, Shira. Maybe the people who really changed the world, the P.T. Barnums, the Elon Musks, the Steve Jobs, are not great interpersonally.
But, yeah.
I mean, you know, often they say that people with bipolar disease, some of the greatest creators and artists in the world, because they were mentally ill, they had all this manic energy at some point, and then they crashed. And you don't want to breed that out of the genome, because that's where the geniuses come from.
I think you could be mentally stable.
What do you say, Ginevra or Alex?
No, Shira, go ahead.
Oh, I don't think it's about pushing out who you are and your gifts to the world, which means like if you have some sort of disability or if you have something that others look at as a limitation, it's not about taking that away or forgetting that's there or erasing it. I think it's about figuring out the best way to use that for yourself and as it relates to being of service to others.
There's a great book which I read, and it looks like Amazon says I've purchased it twice, which shows how manic I am. Called Touched with Fire. It's by a woman, Kay Redfield Jamison, who was, in fact, diagnosed with bipolar. She became a psychologist studying bipolar. And the book is about manic depressive illness and the artistic temperament. And she talks about people like Van Gogh and others whose genius, I don't want to say was a product of mental illness, but if you cured them...
Yeah, it's not about being cured. I think it's about freedom for yourself and others so that you can, bring your expression and your gifts and your truth to whether it be to yourself, your family, your friends, or the world, depending on how you want to express that.
Well, and there's a lot of suffering. I mean, Van Gogh suffered, Lord Byron suffered,
of course,
Virginia Woolf suffered.
Challenges lead to freedom.
That's
like,
true.
Like, your challenges are your biggest strengths.
The worst thing you could be is unchallenged.
I think so. Right? I think, by the way, that is that thing for all we're talking about, like the idea that they have been.
Oh, and by the way, Devendra's challenge right now is crappy internet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I can't. I'm only hearing every third word. So, and I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I know. I want to hear
Let me a commercial, Devendra. Do you want to reboot your system? Did you reboot right before you got on?
It's internet. Like it is. It's the internet in New York because everyone's home and trapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will just wait it out. But let me do like a reshuffle and see if anybody's streaming anything.
It's working now.
Go yell at your wife. Stop watching Tiger King.
Stop watching.
I want to hear your what you're going
to
say.
I do. Yeah, I want to hear what he has to say. So let me do a break. We'll come back. We'll continue this conversation. Somebody in the chat room saying, do not, and I agree with this. Roland says you're pathologizing people, Leo. You're treating people like objects by reducing them to their illness. And I don't mean to say that. But I do mean to say that, I guess what I'm trying to say is neurological diversity instead of, say, necessarily mental illness or.
There you go.
That neurological diversity is what propels us, and maybe Elon's particular quirks are what makes it possible for him to change the world. You know, I wouldn't want to take that away from him.
You don't have to be CEO. You can be chief technologist or something like that.
Exactly.
Well, change your job title.
I did not buy a Tesla. And by the way, they've been harassing me. They say you still have $1,000 deposit on a Model 3. Don't you want to buy one now? No. No. Yes. They're desperate, right? They want to sell those units. I think they stopped after April 30th because that was the end of the quarter. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll give you a chance to track down the bandwidth thief. Devendra Hardawar is here, senior editor at Engadget. It's great to have you. Alex Wilhelm, writer for TechCrunch. Great to have you, Alex. So nice to see. This is fun. I love seeing my dear friends. And it's been way too long since I've seen Shira Lazar, and it's so great to see you. And so great to see how well you're doing, Shira. Peace inside. Live. I've been watching her crazy vegan cooking on Instagram.
Yes.
She's Shira Lazar on Instagram. You're wonderful, and it's such a thrill. Oh. I don't know why it's been so long, but we won't let it get this long again.
Yes.
I apologize.
So fun.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by a big barracuda. I always want to play the heart song, but I won't, because this barracuda is the provider of cloud-enabled enterprise-grade security solutions. And you know what? If you are in the biz, you know the name Barracuda, one of the best-known names in security, protecting email, protecting networks, protecting data, protecting applications. And right now, Barracuda is your best friend, because suddenly businesses have hundreds, dozens, maybe thousands of employees working at home, getting tons of email every day, but without the protection that they had at work. 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email. And it was last year that ransomware became the number one cyber crime, beating out credit card theft. It is getting worse and worse and worse. And your employees are sitting ducks. They're at home with no protection, spear phishing, ransomware, account takeover, conversation hijacking. Multiply those by how many employees out there, how many emails a day. One click is all it takes. On the one wrong email, it can cost you money, customers, and your reputation. Barracuda is a great place to go. Go to their website, barracuda.com/twit. Look at the blog. They've got great posts about the issues you're facing, we're all facing. They've been observing a big spike in spear phishing attacks related to coronavirus, 667%. 667% increase since the end of February. Of course, the bad guys jump on disaster. They say, it's opportunity. And they're going after your employees. I want to tell you about one of the things Barracuda does that's really great. They call it total email protection. If you use Microsoft Exchange, this is a way to protect your inbox, in the inbox of your employees, even if they're working at home. All-in-one email security. It also includes backup and archiving. Of course, you still have, even though your employees are at home, you still have that, you know, legal responsibility to keep those emails for some period of time, sometimes as long as 7 years, depending on what you do. AI-based protection from spear phishing, from account takeover, from business email compromise. You want that too, because you can write rules, but it's changing all the time. So AI protection is getting smarter, always adjusting as the attacks mutate. They have an automated incident response that gives you options to quickly and efficiently address attacks. If you've got employees at home, they're getting email, you got to protect yourself. Barracuda also offers security awareness training that they can take at home to educate your workforce so employees know their responsibility. They are the first line of defense against attacks. They want to protect your company just as much as you do. Give them the tools they need. Give them Barracuda Total Email Protection. There are, I mean, I've seen emails out there impersonating the World Health Organization. Your company's probably getting spear phishing attacks impersonating you, impersonating the boss, the managers, the owners. They use domain spoofing. Some of these attacks promise, you know, things that your employees want, like coronavirus information. The whole idea is to trick users into a phishing scam, and that's bad for your business. Ensure the safety and security of your business. Barracuda Total Email Protection. To uncover the threats hiding in your inbox, you can get a free, right now, secure email threat scan of your Office 365 account, risk-free. So this is just something they're giving away right now. Barracuda.com/twit. BARRACUDA.com/twit. Barracuda, your journey secured. One of the best names in the business. Thrilled to have them as a sponsor. Thank you, Barracuda. Thank you for taking advantage of this. Barracuda.com/twit.
I'm in the comments, Leo. There's some interesting things happening.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. I just wanted, because someone, I think that, you know, when we talk about mental health and people that...
Oh, you're looking at the chat room, you mean?
Yeah, I just think it's interesting because someone wrote, autism doesn't create a lack of empathy, and that's true. We don't want to create any sort of...
It's not about judgment. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's saying that we shouldn't reject neurodiversity just because it's not like us. There's a lot
totally.
To be said.
I'm just saying, at the level of a CEO and someone that is responsible like that, like there's a lot of things to take into account. So our hope is that someone would have the self-awareness to realize that it's more than just about them. That's it.
Shouldn't the board do that, Alex? Why isn't his board do something about it?
It's hard in Elon's case because he's not just another CEO that was brought into like a company like GE that is therefore more replaceable. He is integrated into the brand, the mythos. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But if he had better friends, back to my earlier point, or better advisors or just people in his life who could tell him the truth, having him step down as CEO and take on a role that's better fit to his, you know, large skill set would, I think, be very intelligent and better for the business. It would make everything better. But going back a degree to what we were just talking about, you know, there is a mistaken thought in parts of our society that you have to be somehow tortured or broken or something has to be going mm-hmm. pretty hard on you to make great art. I don't think that's true. Or to do things of great genius. And I always get very sensitive when I hear people begin to kind of say that certain things could lead to more creativity. You know, and bringing this back to me, sorry, before I did quit drinking, if you were here in the pre-show, you heard a little bit about that. Sorry. I was worried that my personality was going to change, that I wouldn't be able to write. I wouldn't be funny, that nothing that I liked about myself would persist in a post-drinking world. It turns out all that was wrong. And so at least from my sample set of one,
you're not alone. A lot of artists think they have to drink to create. That's not true. To create. Yeah.
Not or what true. If you do the work and work on yourself or find some other options, you're scared you'll lose the things that you did win in the past. But I think it's about like all those things change. Like I think what we've created in the past is awesome. And sometimes we get to create it more or differently in the future.
Right.
So it's like about not being too attached to any of those things that we put out there or that are expressions of ourselves. Like we could get too attached to those things and we need them for our own identity. So I think that's also what's important.
Devinder, now that you're back, did you were starting to say something and we lost the internet. I don't know if the thought is still there. Do you want to talk about
I'm thinking, I feel like you guys have covered it, but I don't want to do too much like armchair, psychiatry here. So like that's the tough thing. But in general, one thing I've heard, by the way, just researching people writing about Tesla is that the board seems like they're friends and kind of handpicked by him too. Right. So they're not like maybe doing the duty of protecting the company when I feel like in another company, they would be quick to criticize the CEO for doing anything like that. And also for him in particular, like, he's lived a very unique life. And I think that's it. Like we're seeing how out of touch somebody like Elon is when it comes to dealing with people and his workers. And I think we're starting to see that change a little with some of the tech CEOs. Like I bring up Satya Nadella quite a bit whenever I'm here, just because I've been following Microsoft so closely and everything he's done has been really interesting and empathetic and very different compared to, like, certainly compared to Bill Gates, certainly compared to Steve Ballmer. So there is a different way. I hope more people take a look at that and not the, like, billionaire who, you know, the hotshot billionaire who's changed the world, but maybe, you know, doesn't quite understand people as well.
Yeah, Nadella deserves more credit. Actually,
he's
gets a
doing
lot.
Doing great
he
work.
He is an amazing CEO who has taken a company that really could easily have not survived into the 2020s and turned it around and made it one of the big powerhouses of this era. So he gets a lot.
I mean, it's the most valuable company in the world. And Satya is more likely to tell you about going for walks and talk about poetry than, you know, other stuff. And,
amazing,
you know,
guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And people want to work there. They want to work for him. I think people at Tesla are probably a bit more afraid of Elon than people at Microsoft are of Satya.
Yeah.
You know, it says a lot about leadership.
Yeah.
But we should probably, you know.
We should probably talk about TikTok instead.
Oh, yeah, my favorite.
Great.
TikTok, 2 billion downloads. I didn't even know there were that many people on the internet. 2 billion downloads sets a record for app installs in a single quarter. Is this TikTok's time? Is COVID-19 the best thing that ever happened to TikTok? Shira Lazar, you're a TikToker.
I am. I was actually on when it was Musical.ly before they got acquired by ByteDance and became TikTok. I mean, listen, I'm amazed at how it had a resurgence. Like, I've never seen a company flatten out and plateau, and then with the acquisition, they were able to build again. But I think partially it's because ByteDance has so much money. Like, it doesn't even matter. They almost can't fail. And they figured out their groundswell. They figured out the audience. And then it was like, they did pay a ton of people, I think, to get things going. But
once
the audience came, I feel like some people were paid. But then at the same time, they would say to people, like, all the people they would onboard, like celebrities or big companies, they would feature their videos and they knew they had the audience. So it was like, you're going to get a ton of followers and engagement, we promise, because we're going to put it in front of people.
But isn't it the case that the best TikToks and the biggest TikToks are not conventional celebrities?
Yeah. So I think it's a mixture. Like, if you go on your For You, you'll see definitely celebrities and traditional publishers. Like Washington Post, I don't know if that would have been just like naturally discovered by a teenager.
No. And do you think they're doing well?
They did it well, but the difference is they did it well. They followed the best practices. And then TikTok was like, we're going to push you because, like, if Washington Post does well, we can get like New York Times and we can get all these other publishers on. So it helped. It's a win-win for everyone when you give someone a little boost. As long as they're doing it well, they need to be doing good content, and they did. And then there's also, if you go on your For You page, which is their curated page of stuff that you would like, it is a mixture of everything. They've been really, I would say their algorithm's been really good at that. But then they've also been called out from different minority groups and different, you know, types of people that they've called out TikTok for either black and brown people, their content not being shown, or like if you're a plus size person, or like if you have a different type of body that they don't deem as hot or sexy, like it doesn't show in the algorithm. So they've been called out by many different groups and LGBTQ plus community as well. So like they need to figure that out.
Definitely. Yeah, it feels like the money and the support by the parent companies are the big key here. Like you look at Vine, and I really liked Vine as a platform, the sort of like ingenuity that would appear there. But Twitter just didn't have the capability to really push that forward, or like the funding or anything either. So it is Vine. It's Vine Redux with music, you know, remixing and a really more powerful algorithm and a whole company like dedicated to making this a success. So, you know, it's good for TikTok. I think Vine proved that this platform, it proved that short, really tiny video is really compelling, especially if it's easy to produce and you open it up to people to make all sorts of fun, creative stuff. Like, that's it. We want this. We don't want like Quibi or something, right. You know?
Well, let's talk about Quibi.
Oh, Quibi. I have so much to say.
Yeah. So like Vine made stars. Vine made some stars, sui generis, out of nowhere. Just they're huge stars. They've, I think, kind of migrated to TikTok. There is also some features of TikTok. You give a lot of credit to ByteDance, but people from the outside, like me, look at things like the really easy way to take it, to see a video, see what they're doing, copy the soundtrack, and do it.
Yeah.
Little things like that make people more creative. I feel like there's a UI advantage, too.
Yeah, I think it's like the perfect storm. It was like the stars were aligned for them. Yeah. I think it was like the platform made sense. It was like it felt like there was an ease to it. Like it's the use of music, the use of sound effects, comedy, challenges, the mixture between like the discovery slash like being able to follow the people you're following slash then being able to go to the hashtags. I think it was just like the mixture
of
everything.
The above.
Made sense.
It's the perfect meme generator. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Being able to copy and repeat and share.
And like, one thing we know about the Utes, they love their memes.
Love the memes.
You know what, though?
It's not just the Utes. I have a lot of friends in their 40s who love to send me spicy, dank memes. And I'm always surprised by it. I'm like, where did you find this on the internet? And why did you text it to me at 4 o'clock in the morning?
It's like a 50-year-old guy who loves rap. I feel like they're trying too hard.
No.
Sorry, Alex.
No, go ahead, Shira. Defend them.
No, because if you look at, there's this woman that's gone viral for being a vegan, Tabitha Brown, and she's in her 40s. She was an actress in L.A. We didn't know her until March, and she just completely went viral. But I think it's a mixture between—
Is that because ByteDance pushed her or because—
I think it's a mixture. This is the thing. I do think you could have talent emerge and bubble to the top. That just happens on every platform. I think it's a mixture between that and then the algorithm, seeing that people are liking it at a certain rate and commenting on it at a certain rate and watching it. And then if that does get in front of someone at TikTok and they say, wow, this person's amazing. They're also in an age demo that we want to cater to. Let's like give them some love. Let's see if we do put this in the For You page, how many people would interact with it. But I think once they see no one's interacting with it, they're not going to like continue pushing it.
I mean, I'm looking at the World Health Organization. This seems like the least likely TikTok.
They did a campaign with them for washing your hands.
But so they got 1.8 million followers, 5.2 million likes.
Yeah, they put
some of their videos. This one's been viewed by 12.2 million people. If you're the World Health Organization, you're going, this is the place for us to get the word out, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting. Alex, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just thinking about what we said about TikTok. 40-year-old
hip friends.
Well, I think I want to expand it to kind of all humans because I'm fascinated by how well Vine did before Twitter killed it, unfortunately, and then how well TikTok has done and how they released it to Twitter itself, because they all took something that we already have, videos, written word, whatever, and demanded the absolute shortest version of it. And it's worked out really beautifully well. YouTube, on the other end of the spectrum, you can do hour-long videos, documentaries, whatever. It's really great for that. And then in the middle is Quibi. In this weird dead zone of content, and I was hoping we could talk about it.
I don't know why. Why Quibi?
Why?
They were gonna launch it right when the economy was roaring, and everyone was on the go. And instead, they launched it when everyone was home.
Well, they didn't have a choice. They didn't have a choice.
I know, but it's rough for them.
So, Shira, I'm gonna put Shira on the spot because you're in Hollywood. So
I'm in Venice, so I'm a bit of more of a hippie in Hollywood. Yes, okay. Thank you.
I love Venice, by the way.
Yes.
We rented a house on the canals there, and I just think, I want to move here. Awesome. I love it. It's the most beautiful place in LA. Anyway, but I feel like because of what's trending and because of your connections, because of you kind of do get the Hollywood. There is a Hollywood mindset. And for years, the word convergence, I mean years, like decades, like 20 years, the word convergence kept coming up. When is Silicon Valley going to meet Hollywood? And when is that convergence going to happen?
Yeah.
And what happened, in my opinion, is they were very disparate cultures. And Silicon Valley is YouTube. Silicon Valley is TikTok. Silicon Valley is
Netflix.
It's very different. And what Quibi to me was Jeffrey Katzenberg, former Disney executive, SKG executive, Meg Whitman. There's the convergence. She ran HP, I guess.
Into the ground,
I guess. Tried to run for governor. I don't know. But I think that's why she's on. Why she's one of the two, because it's convergence. They still have this dream.
The ultimate company. Yeah. It's like the top person in tech, the top person in entertainment media coming together to create the top platform.
It's high concept, which is what Hollywood does, right? Hollywood is all about high concept. It's about deals, and you get the book deal, and you get the merch deal, and you get the that's how they think. And so I think Hollywood's looking at TikTok and they're looking at YouTube and saying, crap, you know, these guys, well, we don't really understand what they're doing. Let's deconstruct it, figure it out, and compete and compete with them, and you get Quibi.
Yeah, thing is, we saw this with Go90. Verizon tried to do it, right? They were throwing money at people, and it just couldn't survive. I mean, naturally, with the downloads, because you got it on your phone, there was a quote-unquote audience. There's a difference between an audience and a community.
Yes. Well said.
And that's what they don't realize. Like, yes, you can get views anywhere, but, like, are they really going to care to be part of something bigger?
And that's why,
like,
I think
Netflix has built a community. Like Netflix, the shows, each different shows have fan accounts and now viral feeds, and they're building like a social media accounts for the LGBTQ community that's part of Netflix and the Black community that's part of Netflix. Like, people are coming together to connect with how they connect with the show. So it's now gone from just a platform and delivering a product to a community. And it took them how long? But this day and age, we think that everything's going to happen overnight. And if we have enough money, it can just happen. And just, like, it's not the way it works.
Yeah. I mean, Netflix for a decade was just, you know, DVDs by mail. And then they launched streaming. And I remember when that happened, we were all like, what are we going to do with streaming video? How do we get these to our TVs? And then, like, things started happening, right? We got the set-top boxes. The TVs got software that can actually stream.
By the way,
became the big thing. Yeah,
it goes both ways, because Silicon Valley, remember, Apple wanted to be the set-top box. That's what, you know. Apple also, Silicon Valley also wanted to get into that Hollywood game, but there just seems to be this barrier. You wrote, quit trying to make Quibi happen.
That's it.
I love this piece.
It came out of rage. It came out of, like, a lot of different things, because I'm also a guy, I pay a lot of attention to entertainment too. Like, I review movies, I podcast about movies. Entertainment's a big part of, like, what I do and follow. For me, it's entertainment and tech. I sat down with Jeffrey Katzenberg and Matt Whitman at CES to talk about Quibi, and, like, none of their responses to anything seemed very compelling or interesting. I asked them, like, who wants this? Who's gonna watch this stuff? We have YouTube, we have Netflix, we have all these other sources for content. And they're like, they somehow believe they would be a compelling third option for a lot of people, something people would pay for to see these tiny shows, even though they have some big names. But the shows themselves, like, after I looked at them, they're fine, perfectly fine. If they were on Netflix,
I love Titus Burgess. But it somehow seems tone deaf during the COVID quarantine to be firing food cannons at chefs
and have them eat it off the floor and the walls to make it. It's ridiculous. Like, it is one of those ridiculous, either something you'd expect on, like, 30 Rock, like, just a completely ridiculous show that just wouldn't exist.
Like, in fact, half of Quibi's stuff looks like parody of real TV.
Yeah.
Really?
That's what it is. That's what it funny. Really feels like.
So, and then, like, do you remember Vessel? Did you guys cover Vessel when they tried to do that, where they're like, we'll pay YouTubers $500,000 to $1 million to get their content early, like a week early or 2 weeks early? Like, that didn't even work.
I don't even remember that. But I look at these companies, and Go92, which was created by Verizon, which owns Engadget and TechCrunch. So, you know, that disclaimer's out there. But these companies can't even name these services properly. Like, Go90 was called that because Verizon, they wanted you to Go90 and turn your phone, you know.
Oh, to turn it sideways?
That's
brilliant.
And Quibi is quick bites of entertainment, because that's what I'm asking for, even if we're not being trapped at home in the pandemic.
Do you think it would have done better if people were commuting, they were on subways and buses and waiting in line?
I don't think fundamentally better. Like, if you're on the subway, you don't have steady internet access to watch a streaming video. So then you still have to pre-plan and download. You can fave a show and just say, alert me when there's a new episode, but it doesn't auto-download like a podcast. If it worked like a podcast, maybe that would be better. Like, a good podcast delivery system for video. That's something we don't quite have. That could be cool. But they don't do that. And when you're at home, you can't watch on your TV. They just absolutely didn't think about that. So that is, like, the first thing they're going to add is, like, Chromecast.
Yeah, aren't
support.
They changing that? They announced that they're changing that. Yeah,
they are. But eventually, you know, that should have been there from launch. So I was watching, like, the one of the shows with my wife in front of our 55-inch TV. We had to watch on our phone, because, like, there was no way to get it to my TV.
I know. I was trying to show Lisa.
It's not fun.
And I'm trying to cast it, and it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. Doesn't go anywhere.
Terrible idea.
As much as we're all complaining, like, in I want them to succeed in a way because they spent so much money.
$1.75 billion
Wait, so this is actually real. Like half of LA is out of work. And I do think a part of me could be like resentful and be like, I wish I got a show there. I tried to get in. And of course, it seems like, you know, stupid because you have these like really wealthy billionaires just creating something they think that we need and like throwing it in our faces. And they're like, eat it. Even though you didn't ask it.
Yeah, it's good for you. Eat it.
But on the flip
side, take a quick bite.
If it does do well, that means more people will be hired and more production will happen and more like that is the positive to it. I just it's going to be a hard process to win right now. I do think it's going to be an uphill battle because once again, they create so much and expect us all to consume it all at once to be a success all at once. When if you look at all the platforms that have become the mainstays, they built a, it was a slow roll over time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like Spotify isn't what it is today when it started, you know, over 10 years, like 15 years ago or whatever, 13 years ago.
Well, and I think of what you did with Peace Inside Live, that you could, if you could with Quibi, you'd pivot right now and you do Zoom shows and stuff. But you somehow you can't because they spent more than $1 billion for these big names.
Almost $2 billion. And they have more money coming.
And you can't. And you can't. But Shira Lazar and her buddies can quickly put out a show that's a Zoom call that fits the needs of the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's what Quibi seems like they can't do. What if you were CEO, Shira, what would you do?
Right. With what?
With Quibi. What would you do? What would you do right now with Quibi? You're in charge.
I mean, I think it's the mix between all these platforms, between the big names and then really like discovering new talents.
There's no room for that because only big names are on Quibi.
We're going to have big like programs where it's like, submit your ideas. Like that's the thing that people don't get the importance of, like of breaking talent. Like if you look at Orange is the New Black, Netflix. It was a breakout show. We didn't know any of that talent, the director, the writer.
Right.
Like these platforms have a responsibility to create discovery as well.
Mm-hmm. I will correct you there. Orange is the New Black came from Genji Kohan.
Genji.
I didn't know who that was.
She made Weeds. From Weeds. She made very popular shows on Showtime. That. So it all trickles down.
But excuse me, Shira, but I believe you're wrong. I believe that Genji created...
The key is that they took talent that already existed and like gave her room to flourish, right? Whereas I don't think Quibi is doing that. I do think a lot of these people are just like, got to get that Quibi money. Got to go pitch my show idea.
And I know those people. And like, and also when you pre-shoot all this stuff, it's like the balance between like, you're not going to figure out what works. So you've now spent so much money and more. I mean, I would say 80% or 90% might not even work based on what you see start working. So you don't need to leave any room for error.
But they have enough money. I mean, they're not out of business. They have enough money that they could evolve and pivot, don't you think?
Yeah, that's the hope, that they won't be too attached. I don't think it's too late, but I just wonder, it'll take by year two, I think they'll realize if things are about, you know, not working really.
And by the way, I should mention, like their key technology is the ability to flip from vertical to portrait mode seamlessly, which it works. It's a very cool idea. Actually, and it works, but I never want to watch anything in portrait mode. Like, that's the thing. They spent all this money and talent. Tom Conrad is the CTO. This guy knows streaming media. But yeah, it's not CTO, like product officer, right? But he knows streaming media. They have technical talent and they've done something that we've never seen before, but the content is what we care about. Yeah. So I could see them licensing that tech to like YouTube or something, but it's also shot. Yeah, it's shot in a different way, too. So the directors had to shoot with the idea of framing for portrait and landscape at the same time, which seems super difficult. It's not good enough to make me
interested. I love the innovation. I mean, that's the thing. I love the innovation around that. And actually, these days for IGTV, like, and if you're using it for other platforms, you do need to be shooting in portrait and in wide. So it's like, I do think that's going to be the future where cameras are going to be able to give you both those options.
You shoot both ways when you're shooting for Instagram?
Sometimes, so this is the thing. If you're shooting a video that's going to end up on YouTube, other platforms,
those are wide. Right.
And then if you want to put it on IGTV too, and then
shoot it the other way.
Snapchat or do an Instagram highlight and story, you need to be shooting, thinking about wide and vertical. And I think, I do think that's the future. So I do think the platform is innovative and the tech is innovative, like what you said. I think the ultimately the programming and the audience building is going to take time. And as long as they're patient with that and they're honest about their discoveries and what works and what doesn't and moves towards toward what works, then I think people are going to be forgiving. And I do think if they blend in, bringing in different communities that aren't just like, it's not about just about star power, but actually about like really hunkering down on movements and communities that matter, then they can possibly make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I will say I've heard from people within Hollywood, by the way, sorry. Just one quick thing. People have been talking, saying that this is a service that exists to get non-union workers on board making shows because these things are so short. So
that's bad.
Maybe there's something within like contract work where you, if you're making a 10-minute show, you're not making an episode. Therefore, our union terms don't apply or something. But yeah, go ahead, Alex.
I hope that's not the case.
So I didn't talk for a little bit there because I was fascinated by the conversation, but I want to jump in on the financial point about licensing the tech, how much money has gone into this business and that sort of thing. I see 0% chance that they can generate enough revenue as a software company licensing their flipping technology, which I just saw the screenshot. That was super cool. I would use that, but I wouldn't pay for it to generate enough revenue to kind of justify their valuation and the capital that has gone into this business. And the other thing that we're talking about a lot is time. Time to find new shows, time to find new audiences, time to find new stars, new actors and directors and so forth. They don't have a lot of that without more money coming in nine-figure increments. And if you blow your launch and you don't drive a lot of early subscriptions when they're free for, I think, 3 months, you don't have a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
And so I'm concerned that the next check might not come. And if it doesn't come, this whole thing folds pretty quickly. And you sell for $48 to Verizon probably. Dang, hello, employer. But like, we all saw this coming. It's the weirdest thing. This has been something that we've all known for a year was going to struggle at launch. And here it is struggling at launch. And I'm not even someone who's focused on, streaming media per se, but I don't recall any single person I read on Twitter, the news industry, whatever, that was positive about this pre-launch. And sadly, it seems to be correct. Now that it's kind of here.
They blew their load early. And also, they're going to fail upward. My two favorite phrases.
Well, fail upward though, how, I guess, Shira?
Hollywood is a hit-driven business, right? That's how Hollywood works. They don't expect every movie to be a hit.
True, but they spent so much money on this and they raised so much money. In the end, Jeffrey Katzenberg and Meg Whitman will be fine and they'll end up getting acquired by one of their friends and they'll fail upward, meaning like that. Or, ultimately, it's not like they're going to fail and then they're going to not be able to try
again. I'm not worried about their financial status.
Right,
But they may also be saying, look, when I was at Disney, not every movie was a hit, but the hits that were big paid for all the rest. Maybe they're just holding out for the hit and they don't have it yet. But I'm not surprised. Apple doesn't have a hit yet on Apple TV Plus either.
What about the morning show?
Well, the difference is that Apple has several $100 billion of cash in the bank and, enormous operating cash flow per quarter. And I just can't figure out where Quibi is going to stand up because, as we said, TikTok has 2 billion downloads in the last quarter. Leah was shocked there's that many people online. That is people caring about the product, wanting to invest in it and so forth. And we have long form stuff. We love Netflix, Amazon Prime, all the other stuff. Quibi is just in this weird zone.
We don't need it. You're right. They also, it's a disadvantage because in order to take advantage of their one cool technology feature, you have to, you have to know what you're doing. You can't, some 14-year-old can't just do a video. And honestly, these days, that's a detriment. You need to be able to get everybody creating.
You also can't share anything. You can't share screenshots. You can't share video clips. Yep. Like, it's such a weird closed-off system.
That's Hollywood not.
Yeah.
So that's exactly why convergence never happened. Because Hollywood is so scared of technology and piracy and sharing, and they hate that. And Silicon Valley knows that's how you make it. And they're never the twain shall meet. They just, they don't trust each other.
I feel like you either need to decide as a platform if you're going to be a lean back or lean in and interactive. And if you're trying to be both, it might work against you.
I couldn't decide whether to lean back or lean forward. But then when they launched the food cannon, I leaned back. But then Murder House Flip, I had to lean forward.
That is truly a good concept of insanity. Yeah, Murder House Flip.
It's totally out of 30 Rock. So I didn't watch all the shows. I tried to. Chrissy Teigen as Judge Judy was... I don't know who would watch that. If you want Judge Judy, you watch Judge Judy. Yeah. I don't...
I want to watch a reality show of Chrissy Teigen and John Legend. I don't want to watch her necessarily as a judge. A fake judge.
That's just their YouTube channel, right? Like, that's what Will Smith is doing. That's what everyone, like, all their fun stuff is on YouTube.
Well, they got to be looking at John Krasinski's Some Good News and going, why not us? I mean, here's Quibi, spent almost $2 billion. John Krasinski's got sock puppets and a globe. and he's got probably many more views, I would guess, many more views. He's certainly much more popular. But we don't know how well Quibi's doing. Maybe we're all wrong. Maybe Quibi's doing great. Maybe everybody's
I mean, we saw from the stats, like, it fell from the top downloads list pretty quickly. Like, it slid down quickly. So that much we know it's not, like, popular download-wise. Yeah.
So what's... Also,
Android is doing well. Android's doing well because they're on T-Mobile.
Mm-hmm. Ah, so you get it. You just get it. So what, Shira, is the real story behind Some Good News? You must know the dirt.
Oh, well, no, he started this in quarantine, which makes it, like, such a good story. Yes. It's in reaction to what's happening. And that's why, like, phenomenons or movements start when it just feels like it emerges out of out of what the consciousness or, like, what's happening right now. It feels authentic, and it's so authentic. And then the thing is, it just feels like he creates it himself. Like, it just, it is him at home.
Which anybody who knows, as you very well know, how hard it is to do content, knows very well. He's got a team of dozens. I mean,
that's the thing is, you know, someone, like, I'm thinking about, like, who's editing this? Because they're making it look like brilliant. Not professional while it is professional.
Exactly.
So it's like fine balance.
It's hard to do. Yeah.
And their sketches and, like, their video segments are just as good as late night shows right now. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm trying to figure it out. I read an article that said his manager thought of it and called John, and they whipped it together in a couple of weeks. I think there's more to it than that. I've thought that probably John Krasinski's been telling his manager for 3 years, get me a late night show. I want a late night show. I should be on a late night show. And they thought, oh, here, we'll take it. We'll do this because it's better. It is. It's he should have a late night show. He's brilliant.
It's fine. I mean, like, it's also, it seems like he's been pushing away from the Jim the Office identity for so long because he's been taking all these action roles.
Well, Jack Ryan role doesn't fit him. He is Tom Hanks. He is the next Tom Hanks. He's the nice guy, the everyman.
Mm-hmm. And Quiet Place, which I think surprised us that he could write and direct,
good director.
And, you know,
yeah,
star in something like that. Yeah, so I think that's good. Yeah. I want to throw a shout out to the late night shows, though, because I do love how they've adopted the Zoom and the remote recordings. And, like, they're doing it in such fun ways. I love Conan O'Brien. He is doing a phenomenal job with that. And even Colbert, like, they got him a proper, you know, Sony production camera, but it still feels a little off the cuff, which I think we can all relate to. Like, a lot of people are stuck at home. We're not all stuck at home, but the people who are can feel like, oh man, they're trapped just like we are. And
it's
we
a
feel
measure
some sort of sympathy
of,
there.
And so this is, I don't want to put down, there is real talent in Hollywood, and it's a measure of the very real talent that they were able to do something that, you know, is so different from what they did. And at first, I have to say, it was a little hollow watching John Oliver without an audience tell the same jokes. They fell, boom, they thudded.
Super flat. Yeah.
But they learned. Yeah, and it got better and better. The writers learned, the producers learned. And so that's where you do see there is something to be said for real talent. And Hollywood's got that. I don't want to put them down at all.
Yeah, there's real talent everywhere. It's just a matter, are you going to, like, say that this only matters because I put a ton of money against it? Or are you going to say, like, doesn't mean I know everything?
Yeah, and you can't deny the Quibi's well produced. It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost too well produced, which is the weird cognitive dissonance I saw too. Like, if I'm watching vertical video, I expect it to look like a YouTube video or an Instagram live or something. Yes. Like, I expect that. If it looks like a slickly produced Hollywood show, it just feels wrong in a weird way too. So I don't know how to describe that except, like, pure media dissonance for me.
What do you think of Snapchat and the way they do vertical shows? Because they've been killing it, actually. None of us really know that, but, like, the CPMs and money that people are getting on Snapchat is amazing. Like, Will Smith started Will at Home. So, like, why does that work versus this, possibly?
I mean, Snapchat was natively portrait, too, right? Like, that's what their audience learned and understood, and they had to build up to that, like you were saying. Like, it had to build up to being able to produce these original shows after everybody was using Snapchat, right?
Yeah.
Just think how great Snapchat would have been if they had said, go 90, turn it, turn it, turn it.
Turn it, turn it.
Turn it. We could start a song, turn it.
Turn the video, turn it. Snapchat's a really, really, really good example. And I think Quibi really wants to be Snap. That's really what they wanted to be. And it's a great example of how being sensitive to the culture and the style and the feel and the audience is an absolute requirement. You can't just march in and say, we're going to take it. Well, we make great movies. We know, and great TV shows. We know how to make great content. We're going to make it 7 minutes long and vertical. Watch. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
Look at Facebook original shows. Like, they threw in so much money as well. And the only show that ended up doing well and is now something bigger is Red Table Talk. Like, out of all their shows, that shows the percentage chance of a show making it and hitting it. How much money did they spend? It was like one show that now will be sustainable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm glad we have Devendra and Shiran because you both in different ways pay attention to this stuff. Now it's your turn, Alex Wilhelm, because it's quarterly report time. Here, I thought we would have, given what was the volatility on the stock market, I thought we were going to get these horrific quarterly reports, but we didn't. Apple, $58 billion in revenue, only up 1%, but up is up. Alphabet grew more than expected in Q1, a little bit of a dip in ad business. We knew that would happen. Facebook says significant reduction in demand for ads, but their stock still went up, up, up. Twitter sales up 3%, $808 million. So tell us, you got to parse this for us, Alex, because as you can see, as a layman, I don't know what I'm looking for or what I'm looking at. Is it too early to see the COVID hit?
So what we're seeing is the first quarterly earnings that include a bit of COVID. Seeing kind of March from these, you know, January, February, March earnings showing some impact. More important was what the company said about what was coming next. And we saw a lot of the reactions more based on what they said was going to happen the rest of the year than what happened kind of in Q1. So, for example, Facebook said we took a hit in March, but in April, things are roughly flat from a year ago. Wall Street said, okay. Twitter said we took a hit in March and things are still kind of bad in April, meaning that growth is going to go down or go negative. Twitter fell pretty sharply. So the way people are talking about forecasts is what matters the most. But there's always a bit of nuance in these reports that's fun to pull out. Like Apple grew 1%, but it made a lot more revenue off of services, which is kind of its new push for the future.
$13 billion. Yeah.
$13 billion and change. Yeah. And it saw less hardware revenue. So we're seeing Apple make less money from selling iPhones and more money from selling iCloud storage. I think they've been trying to do for some time. Now services are supporting the business and keeping it in positive growth territory, even though it's selling fewer iPhones. Cool.
In other words, Apple executed properly. They did exactly what they wanted to do.
It's been a long time coming. It's a long-term bet. It's going to take them several more years to get those revenue lines, anything like in the same, you know, area size, but certainly it saved them this quarter. In Alphabet's case, the ad business struggled some, but there was much funnier things to be found. I mean, for example, Other Bets, which is the collection of Alphabet stuff that isn't Google, saw its revenue decline year over year and also lose $1.1 billion in the quarter, which I thought was
But they've been doing that anyway, haven't they? I mean, they're not a moneymaker. It's got worse.
No. Yeah. The revenue went down. The losses went up, which I thought was particularly
egregious.
Who are
going to be the winners in COVID? Netflix? Yeah.
Huge.
Facebook should be a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Except ad revenue will be down, but certainly audience. Their daily active users, 1.734 billion.
Wow.
That's astounding.
Absolutely astounding.
Daily. Will Amazon be? That's a good question, Shira.
After the latest news, it went down, but wasn't it up?
How was up pretty sharply. Fair. Yeah, I mean, I've been ordering more on Amazon.
Amazon's shares went down after they said they were going to spend $4 billion, I think, in the current quarter on kind of COVID-related costs. But what you have to keep in mind is that was like a week of gains that they gave back. Mm-hmm. So they're not really down. They haven't really lost a lot of altitude. Amazon's doing incredibly well, as it has done since I started paying attention to stocks. So that's not really much of a surprise. That's a company that can pivot pretty quickly and take advantage of a moment and as an organization do well. So you got to give them points for that.
They did do something they rarely do, which is they missed their estimates.
They did.
And
especially on the profit side.
That's unusual because don't they control that? I always feel like Bezos has a knob in the office that he can
He can turn.
Right. I'm going to make more money this quarter. I make a little less money this quarter.
Yeah. I mean, I think any company.
Go ahead, Devendra.
Please.
No.
Any company supporting remote work and remote learning too, I think, has a lot to gain. Zoom's doing well.
Yeah,
I followed Microsoft's earnings because that's my beat, and they were up 15% over that quarter too. So their business is doing great when it comes to office and cloud storage and things like that. Yeah,
and it's been a good time for Twitter, right? We're all turning to Twitter more than before. I don't know about earnings, but the daily active users want. Now, for some reason, they have something called monetizable daily active users. Does that mean non-bots? I don't know what that means.
We can make money
on these guys. I don't know. Is that Gap monetizable daily active users?
That's the inverse of Gap. Whatever Gap is, Gap is an acronym, GAAP, Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. When you make up your own metric, DAU, and then you add another kind of adjustment to it, you're MDAO. Completely off the farm.
It's an MDAO. Our MDAO grew 24% year over year, partly because of the global conversation related to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's their highest reported year over year growth rate to date. 14 million MDAOs added. I really want to know what unmonetizable daily
I think you're probably right, Leo. Like, it is bots. Like, it's a lot of things because RSS is effectively dead as a platform. People use Twitter for that.
Also, I was going to say, as someone who has monetized on Twitter before, we would have videos that either were just like that were original videos that we could monetize, and then content we couldn't monetize. So like, you could have some stuff that you're pushing out that is just content, has impressions and views and following, and that could be, against that, but then we can't monetize that. So that's unmonetizable. Huh.
You're talking about the Periscope and the live videos, that kind of stuff?
No, like the actual our content we post. Like one of our YouTube videos on what's trending, we'll post it on Twitter. We can monetize the ones that are appropriate, that are advertiser friendly. But the ones that might have a swear word or ones that we might pull from like a meme or whatever, we can't monetize that because it's not our content. Okay. So it's unmonetizable. So you could say like the monetizable is that.
Right.
So there's a lot on Twitter, a lot of content on Twitter that can't be monetized. Well, they can't put advertiser dollars against that.
Shira never swears, so.
I actually got into trouble on my radio show. Listen to this. So I have a radio show. I do this daily afternoon drive radio show for radio.com weekdays.
Oh, I got to listen to that.
We are channelq.com/listen. I'm going to post a video after this on my Instagram. Anyway. But we're pre-recording it during this time because we go live 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific. So we pre-record and I did an outtake. I said, coming up, and I lost track of where I was at. I said, fuck, I lost track. And my editor included it on the show.
Oh, that's a big fine. That's an FCC. I guess you're not.
No, we are. We're in 36 markets on HD2 and AM and all that. And we got a call from our bosses on Friday night.
That cost him a lot of money.
Said, I'm hoping that calls in for that. But like, that was a mistake. You could see that I was making a mistake, but someone ended up putting it in. And that's the thing, is you're going to have all these mistakes from this type of work because we're all like doing the work in ways and processes that we weren't doing it.
So do you play music? What do you do on your afternoon show?
It's a music talk station called Channel Q. It's the first LGBTQ+ music talk station. So it's part of radio.com.
Yeah.
Which is an app. Yeah. And so it's called Channel Q is the station on radio.com.
Do you say things like, you're driving home with Shira on a perfect Wednesday afternoon?
Yeah. It's actually, what's cool is there's very few stations that have a mix between music and talk, but we actually talk about current events, social issues. Cool. We have interviews with people.
I want to listen to that. That's great.
Yeah. And then it's also available as a podcast. If you go on radio.com and search Let's Go There with an apostrophe, like Let's Go There, they need to fix that. We post all our episodes there. So a lot going on. But yeah, I just thought it was funny because I realized how I have such a potty mouth. And potty mouth sounds weird, but I do swear. I swear a bunch.
I have to. My wife, the beautiful Lisa, has the most, the worst. I mean, the worst. Every other word is the F word. And which is fine with me. It doesn't bother me. But as you know, I am on the radio. So I endeavor not to use any of that language. And so it's an interesting mix where I'm saying, shut the front door. And she's saying, anyway, you get the idea. I think I lose something in that. In that mix.
I need to put the link in because we don't get our views, like, because radio.com is so kind of we're on iTunes but or Apple, but they want us to get the radio.com listen. So I'm gonna put in the radio.com link.
We are channelq.radio.com. Listen, yes, and what time are you on? 3 to 7 PM?
4 to 7. 4 to 7 live on weekdays and then Pacific. The podcast too. But yeah.
Pacific. So if you're on the East Coast, it'd be 7 to 10, or do they time shift? No, it would be. Okay.
Yeah, it's 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. We're live. Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. I'm going to listen to your show, man.
Yeah. Thanks.
During my commute from the bedroom to the living room. It's a short commute.
Here, I'm putting the link in the chat.
So actually, that's another company that's doing very well, Spotify, right now. A lot of consumption. They said every day is a weekend now when it comes to Spotify listening.
Oof.
Every day is a weekend.
It sounds good until you think about why. Yeah.
130 million paid users, up 31% year over year, 2 billion in revenue, which sounds, for something with 130 million paid subscribers, a little low to me.
They are making a big podcast push, which I'm going to be interested to see how they treat that, because I still feel like we're waiting. We're waiting for podcasts to really become huge and consumable and everybody understands it.
I think someday podcasts are going to be something.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, they spend $230 million on Gimlet Media. They spent north of $100 million for Bill Simmons' Ringer. They've spent a lot of money. I think Daniel Ek said they were prepared to spend $500 million on podcast acquisitions. They bought Anchor FM. Spotify said podcast listening is still growing. Now tell me, Alex, doesn't that sound, when you hear still growing, that doesn't sound real good?
No, because they would tell us if it was impressive. Going back to what we said about Quibi, when we said we don't know how they're doing because they haven't released numbers, they would have released numbers if they were good.
Here's the
numbers. It's always the case.
Podcast listening is still growing, with 19% of monthly active users engaged with that content, whatever the hell that means, up from 16% previous quarter. I don't know what engaged with content even means.
No. Is it 5 seconds of a listen? Is it 15 seconds? Is it half a show? Is it three shows? I mean,
they've been doing more and more of these like auto-played playlists too, which I find kind of interesting. Like if you start driving, there's a playlist like, I'll auto-generate music and shows for you to listen to based on your preferences. And
is
maybe
that what people want? Do you think people want that?
I don't. It is hard to find good content. Like, that's a thing. And
Discovery's,
I don't know,
is a big
all
deal,
the animated
isn't
stuff.
It?
Wasn't there something that came out that said that podcast listening was down during this time?
So we've seen it. I can just tell you from our own experience. Initially, it dropped. We're not a news podcast. I'm sure the Daily and the news podcasts, Slate says they're up 30%. So I'm sure those went up at first. But I think after a while, I don't know, my experience has been, okay, I got it. I don't want to listen to this 24/7. So our numbers started trending back up. I think we've regained anything that we lost, and they still seem to be going up. So I think what I feel we lost is the commute. So like any radio show, like any audio-only content, people listen in the car. So since a lot of our audience is no longer commuting, I imagine that hurt us. But I also feel like, and this is reflects, I think, the maturity of the medium now, because you can listen on your Echo. You can listen in a lot of different ways. I think people are listening at home, which is something they never used to do. Radio was all in car for the last 30 years. It's been all in car. So it seems to be going up a little bit. I think also podcasts like ours, where it's friendly, familiar voices talking about stuff you're interested in, are in higher demand as we get more and more isolated and lonely. So I don't know.
That's one thing.
Guessing.
Yeah. I will also say, like, the move towards wireless headphones has made so much of it so much easier too. Like, I'm not the biggest wireless earbud fan, but it does make the convenience of just popping something in your ear, having it as you're doing different things.
I do. I walk around with my earbuds in. That's right.
I have it on all day.
So I think
throwing some more.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Leo, please.
No, I just think that I'm going to say it's bullish. I don't know if Spotify will make its $500 million back, but I'm going to say podcasting's doing okay during this.
Yeah, I think so. I think
we are like everybody else, including Spotify. where advertisers are drifting away. Advertisers are not buying ads because they see the economy tanking.
Yeah.
They don't see sales. So they're thinking, you know, I'll give you a good example. This show normally has 4 ads, and this show is our premier show, so we charge the highest CPMs for this show. We only have 2 today.
Yep.
So yeah. That'll give you some idea. That's a fairly hefty
reduction
in revenue for us.
I'm worried about what that's going to mean for the industry as a whole. Like my movie podcast show, we still have ads, but we are doing kind of like free ads.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of bonusing.
To keep the person around, basically. Right. So,
wow.
Yeah, I don't know what this means for new and upcoming shows for sure.
It's tough all around. I mean, there's so many restaurants in the Bay Area that have now closed for good. They're just not going to come back. I'm sure that's true in Brooklyn. I saw that. Cafe Beau Soleil just closed. I mean, it's just...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Yeah, it is sad to see that. It is. And I think brands, even bigger brands, they're just saving their money because they don't know what the quarter is going to be like, what's coming up, or what they're going to have to market. By the way, their marketing goals are changing. We have new commercials that we've never seen. We have products that they might start launching that they're figuring out.
Yeah. I mean, the world is going to be very different when we come out of this. And also, we don't even know when we're going to come out of this. So that's going to be interesting.
It'll be the world of Demolition Man, basically. We just re-reviewed that, and it is weird how prescient that whole movie is.
I'll watch it again.
Yeah, the whole movie, they don't have handshakes because it's a no-touch culture. There was some sort of pandemic.
Oh, interesting.
Taco Bell is the only restaurant because all the other restaurants closed or got eaten up or bolted. Yeah, so that movie works.
What about Idiocracy?
Yeah, we're also there.
Also a perfect movie.
Also there.
Perfect
no, movie. Not a perfect movie. Depressing
it's
movie.
Not scary.
Do not watch Idiocracy unless
it's
really...
It's too real.
It's too real. Yeah. You do not want to be bummed out.
Yeah.
By the way, when he says he's talking about Slash Film, which is an excellent podcast. Mm-hmm. And I bet you have a bigger audience now because people are desperate for something to watch. They're trying to figure out what's good. So Slash Film is perfect.
So the Slash Film cast and slashfilm.com has its own like daily podcast as well. But I don't know if our numbers are any better, but I hope people seem to be like leaning on us as like the comforting voices that, in the pre, COVID era, something they can go back to. And there's our last few.
Did you like Devs?
I love Devs.
I did too.
I did an interview with Alex Garland over in Gadget.
He's a freaking genius.
So
I'm
he's
going
so
back and watching all of his movies.
Everything he's done. And also something most people don't know, he wrote the screenplay for the Never Let Me Go adaptation, which is a fantastic, fantastic movie, great book. But everything he touches, I adore.
Yeah, Alex Garland's been around a lot longer than Annihilation. And he's written some really interesting stuff. He's got a very interesting point of view. So /Filmcast, that's easy. Everybody should subscribe.
Yes.
Everybody should subscribe to peaceinside.live because we need more peace inside.
We do. Come on.
Yeah.
You won't regret it.
And if we can get 100 new subscribers in the next 60 seconds, Shira will stand up for us.
Oh, yeah. I have a surprise.
Alex, what do you have to plug, Mr. Wilhelm? God.
It's not really apropos, but I'm also on a podcast called Equity with TechCrunch. So if you care about the startup and venture capital world, that is something
How's that going right now? A lot of listeners?
Down about 20%.
Yeah, that's what I think a lot
from
of.
Our pre...
Yeah.
Well, Leo, we put it out on Monday mornings and Friday mornings designed for people who are commuting to and from kind of the work week.
Exactly.
And so if you time it, you're going to get hit. But what's really cool is our core audience has stuck around. And I think the show's getting better because we're having more practice. So when people begin to drive again, I think we will be ready to kind of pick that back up. But surviving and doing just fine.
That's the key is, if we just make it through, if all of us just make it through, a better world awaits. Well, if you think of Demolition Man as a better world.
It'll be a very different world. And I think we're fundamentally going to live with this stuff. And I think our kids are going to ask, or my daughter is certainly going to ask, why do we have a month of food stored in our basement at all times?
This is why. I just bought a 25-pound bag of wheat berries and a 25-pound of corn.
Of wheat.
But you can never have too much wheat.
You know, when you're a teenager, you get in trouble for doing certain things. I feel like the future will be like if you get drunk or stoned and eat the stockpile of food.
You're in trouble. But who's known about this for a long time? The Church of Latter-day Saints. I found out recently. Well, you're a former. Were you a Mormon, Alex?
No, I was Lutheran. I grew up with Mormon friends.
But yeah. LDS has, this has been always one of the tenets of LDS, is to have a year's worth of supplies ready. And so there are all over the country these LDS depots you can go to and buy massive quantities of foodstuffs, including like 100-pound bags of flour.
Yeah. Well, the Mormon faith historically had moved around before it settled in kind of its nexus point that we all know now in Salt Lake and the surrounding areas. And so they have a history of needing to kind of up sticks and go. And so they're a culture that values preparedness. And so it's not a surprise that they've kind of maintained that through time. And after a long time of being kind of on the outskirts of American culture in that way, here they are right in the middle of it now, because it turns out that we're all preppers and we just didn't know it yet.
We just didn't know it. They're called home storage centers.
Wow.
And they're near, and they're definitely all over the place. There's one near us. And you're allowed to go in, even if you're not a Mormon. There are 101 locations across the U.S. and Canada. But be ready, because it's a no-frills operation. And it's mostly like 100-pound sacks of flour, as you can see.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know, if you need flour, beans, rice, there's the place to go.
It's amazing. What do you think about the whole...
No, go ahead.
I'm going to say, what do you think about the whole garden movement? Because I think that, like, as food supply change, we're going to end up like making our own food and just keeping it simple.
I'm not worried about vegetables. I'm worried about pork. So we bought a
a vegetarian.
We bought a pig. And you're right. I'm going to be actually dried beans. Just get a lot of dried beans. We have a friend who does hydroponics. And they're self-sufficient. You have fish, which poop in the water, and that fertilizes the plants, which cleans.
Oh, cool.
The whole thing is a greenhouse. It's all sealed up, and it grows greens or whatever. Gary, you got to build us our hydroponic garden, because I have a feeling.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of science writing about just the decline of meat and fishing, too, over the next few decades. So this will kind of just accelerate all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now I notice, Shira, you eat the impossible stuff, the impossible burger.
I do a bit. I try not to. I know that a lot of people have things to say about that, because some of the ingredients aren't the best for you. So it's, I think, everything in moderation. Like, just because impossible is meatless and it's like vegan doesn't mean you have it every day.
Yeah.
Like, I might have it once a week or so.
Right.
And I like the way it tastes, but it's supposedly like not amazing for you, just because it also has stuff in it that,
if you're going to get something that tastes like meat, you're clearly going to have to do something.
I mean, there are a lot of alternatives now. So I think it'll be interesting to see that world in the future. Like, I spoke to Mark Cuban this week, and on my radio show, actually, we're going to be airing that tomorrow on the show. Ooh. And he's investing. He's a vegetarian. He's investing in a lot of companies that provide meat alternatives.
Good.
And also vegetarian alternatives. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Meat production is tough on the environment, and it's clearly tough on the workers.
It's killing the rainforest. So
It's killing the workers.
Yeah.
Devendra, are you a vegetarian or a vegan?
I am not. I mean, I really believe in this stuff, so I'm like preparing for the eventuality where I'm going to be eating less meat. But no, for now, I'm still very carnivorous.
I don't mind not eating meat at all.
You know, in Canada, they changed the food pyramid. Because like, if you look at Game Changers on Netflix, oh my God, that documentary.
Isn't that a great documentary?
Is it called Game Changers or The Game Changer?
Yeah. It's all these super athletes who are vegan.
Yeah, or plant-based, yeah.
Plant-based, anyway, yeah.
And it really shows, like the whole protein story started out when companies wanted to market on in sports, because they couldn't market cigarettes anymore, like or sports shows or TV, you know, like the games couldn't get cigarette ads because that was wrong. It was illegal to market. So then the meat industry came in and said, like, if you want to be big, if you want to be a man, you need more protein. And that was just like this whole story created.
What if you want to be a woman?
You don't need as much protein. Well, yeah, I mean, it was very male centric, obviously.
Let's take a break. When we come back, there's lots more to talk about. I just having fun hanging out with my friends, Shira Lazar, peaceinside.living, with Alex Wilhelm. Live. live, not living. Live. Live. Alex Wilhelm, who is also not wearing pants. He's with TechCrunch, but I'm not asking him to stand up. At Alex. And Devendra Hardawar. We don't know what he's wearing. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. It's going to stay that way, right?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. Our show today brought to you. Ooh, look what I got here. Ooh. It's so little. It's so cute. It's an iPhone SE. And you know how I got it? I got it from the Fox, from Mint Mobile. This, I have to say, Apple gets a lot of heat for making expensive stuff. $400 for the iPhone SE is an amazing deal, but I'm going to make it an even better deal. How would you like an iPhone SE for $15 a month? It's the new Mint Mobile 15 plus 15 deal. $15 a month for the iPhone SE, $15 a month for Mint Mobile service, $30 a month total for great wireless service. Mint Mobile is amazing. And I have to say, the carriage is great. You get unlimited nationwide talk and text. You get crazy fast 4G LTE. Switching is easy. You can even take your phone number in all your existing contacts. Stop overpaying for wireless. Save money with the Fox. Ryan Reynolds, Mint Mobile at mintmobile.com/twit. I think the iPhone SE is a great solution. And if you've got family members who need a smartphone, what a great way to get them going. $15 for the iPhone a month, $15 for Mint Mobile service a month. By the way, they are extending, and I bet they'll do it again, but right now extending their unlimited data for all. Normally you buy packages of data from Mint Mobile, but during the crisis, they are giving unlimited data. They started March 15th. Find out more at mintmobile.com/unlimited. So no matter what package you're signing up for, you get unlimited data. I like Mint Mobile so much, I ended up getting the $300 a year package. So I'm paying $25 a month, unlimited nationwide text, unlimited calling, and 12 gigabytes of data a month. I never use that all up. It's such a great deal for $25 a month. Cut your wireless bill. Get their three-month introductory plan, $15 a month, plus the iPhone SE, $15 a month. This is a great solution for a kid, for a parent. You want to stay in touch, do FaceTime with them. The iPhone SE, it's cute as a bug's knee. It's just the cutest little thing. I love it. And you know what? In this day and age where we're all wearing masks, it's got Touch ID. You don't need Face ID. You unlock it with your finger. I can't up my iPhone 11. I don't know who you are. You're some guy in a mask. Nope. The SE. I'm telling you, this is the way to go. Mint Mobile. We love Mint Mobile. You're going to love them too. Cut your wireless bill. I think I cut mine by two-thirds. To get your new iPhone SE with Mint Mobile service, each for about $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/twit. This is the best way to get the iPhone SE. mintmobile.com/twit. You'll be cutting your wireless bill to $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan. It's such a great deal. mintmobile.com/twit. Take advantage of this great deal and get yourself the cutest darn phone. Everybody agrees. Devendra, you like this SE, don't you? I bet you do.
I mean, I like the SE. I wish... I would love it to go bezel-less eventually.
And a forehead on a phone these days. But gosh, I mean, I really think, honestly, the Touch ID nowadays is really a great thing.
It's good. It's good. I've never liked Face ID, and this is exactly why. Yeah.
And the size is right. It's easy to carry. It's fast. It's got the iPhone 11 guts. I do notice the screen. It's funny how I've really become spoiled by the OLED screens in the iPhone 11 now. Because this LCD screen, it looks like an old iPhone. It looks like, oh yeah, I remember
that. And OLED is just so much better in like broad daylight and things like that. It's a shame. I will say I'm sad to see the iPhone 5 like case go away. Because to me, that was like the last like really nice, super thin. That thing just felt really nice. So the last SE had that. There are rumors that maybe we will see some of that design back with the next one. So I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, that was the old SE, and the new one, they went to the iPhone 8 design. And it's a little bigger, too. I think there are people who, I think 4.7 is perfect. The 4-inch was felt a little tiny, don't you think? Mm-hmm. A little small. We had a fun week this week on Twit. I don't know. Are we gonna? Is our cooking thing in here? Because that was so much fun. Let's watch.
Aww.
Previously on Twit.
Stupidest product Apple has ever made, or I hope ever will make. I would actually nominate it as the stupidest tech product ever made. The $12,000 solid gold.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Apple hasn't lost touch with the consumer with that product.
Ask the tech guy.
Some devices, like my Dyson 360i, aren't compatible with 5G bands. The vacuum cleaner and the router just can't see each other. 5G does not travel as far as 2.4 gigahertz. You take your Dyson for a little walk, and you walk far enough that you can no longer see the 5 gigahertz, but you can still see the 2.4.
Hands on Android.
A hidden Easter egg in Android opens up a settings section filled to the brim with settings that are made for developers. I'm going to show how some of those options may be useful for everyone.
Hands on iOS.
I am going to show you how to create a Memoji and then how to edit it, how to send it, how to record it. Everything you need to know about Memoji.
All about Android.
So I brought the Oppo Find X2 Pro. This is vegan leather, and it feels super nice to touch. This is it next to the V60.
I don't know if the phone's enormous or you have a small head.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Twit, I have spoken.
You should watch. We did have a good week, but what is not in there is our Friday night. We started doing a Friday night fun thing with the hosts, and this Friday night it was a cooking competition. Aunt Pruitt, Micah Sargent, and Jason Howell received mystery ingredients in a bag. Our producer, Anthony Nielsen, went shopping and brought them over. And they had 1 hour after opening the bag, and this was all on live camera, to make a dish. Now, you tell me if this was fair. Inside the bag, snails.
Oh, man.
Oh,
pickled.
Really?
Pickled cactus, nopalitos.
Oh, sounds like it could be good.
And dragon fruit.
Oh. Yeah.
The world's most interesting taco.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh. Anyway, it's a lot of fun to watch. I think Aunt Pruitt took it away. He won pretty handily, but it was a really fun thing to watch. Three Twit hosts. Go play the audio on this because Jim Cutler, our voiceover guy, is so good.
It's Twit After Hours Shelter in Kitchen Edition. A battle royale with Jason Howell, Micah Sargent, and Aunt Pruitt. With celebrity judges Mary Jo Foley and Andy Anatko, you won't taste the food, but you can vote.
All right. So now that everyone's
doesn't that look like fun? We had a great time.
Oh my god, this is amazing!
This is great. This is so much better than the Quibi show.
It's a good example of if you lean into what's going on in the world, you can make stuff that's timely and appropriate as opposed to mystery murder house flip or something like that,
or eating food off the floor,
or eating food off a floor after a cannon shoots it. Yeah. At you in protective wear that should be given to a hospital.
Though having Mary Jo Foley judge my food sounds absolutely terrifying because Mary Jo Foley knows every single thing ever in the history of mankind. I feel like she would just own
I know.
Me.
I learned something watching this. She went to the Culinary Academy. So she knows what she's talking about. She was actually pretty nice. And thank you, Jim Cutler, who does pro bono voiceover work for us. He is one of the best known voiceover artists in the world. He used to do Tech TV's VO. He still does ESPN, all the radio stations. You recognize the voice. He does such a great job. Thank you, Jim. I cannot thank you enough for, I think it's pro bono. I haven't gotten a bill yet for the VO, the VO work he does for us. It's pretty it's
Have you
pretty
checked
awesome.
Your Venmo? Alerts?
Oh, my God. Wow. I know. Do you send Shira your Venmo payments in public or in private?
Oh, no. I do private. That's weird.
There's no reason for them to be public. Come
they're
on.
They're public by default.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think
mine are private. I'm pretty sure.
Check. You have to turn it on.
It's not like I haven't done anything inappropriate, but except when I go massage, like when I used to get massages all the time, that'd be weird. We'd be like, massage. She's getting a massage once a week.
Yeah, well, what you do now is you use the right emoji and you can make it something, anything you want. My son and his buddies, he's 25, they do it in public, but it's for them. It's an art form.
Right. No, yeah. They love doing that age. Like pizza they love money. Putting everything.
Yeah, but it's a joke. It's never the real thing, right?
Yeah, they say it's something else. Right. And it's like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's pretty funny, I think. If I had any creativity, if I had any spark of creativity, I'd be doing that. But I don't pay anybody for anything anymore. So,
congrats.
How do you? Yeah, no massages, no pedis, no manis, no haircuts. As obviously, none of that stuff. Yeah, I used to use Venmo for a lot of that.
You should just keep the hair growing, Leo. I want to see how long we can go here.
Well, I might not have a choice.
Yeah, just keep it going. Like for me, it just gets like bigger and bushier and curlier, but you can just keep going. I think.
Well,
it'd be cool.
I used to be like you when I was a young man like you. It would grow out, so I never had hippie hair, long hair. I want to have it. I want to see. Then I'm going to do ponytail guy. Nothing better than a gray haired ponytail guy, right?
No, everything's better than a gray haired ponytail.
Live your best life. Now just you have to tie-dye shirts.
Do the ponytail, because then you're definitely a Linux user, Leo. Like, that is every person I used to work with in the server ponytail. House. Like, yeah. Ponytail. Yeah, that guy. Yeah. If you guys watch Silicon Valley, there's, like, one recurring character who works in, like, the warehouse server farm. Definitely a
love
Linux
him.
Guy. I love,
love
him,
him
so much, because I worked with that guy for sure many times.
Oh, that was real. That was real.
Yeah.
That was genuine. So in the next couple of days, your iPhone and your Android device, if they're up to date, relatively up to date, will get pushed the new Apple Google API for contact tracing. And at some point, I wouldn't be surprised if the CDC or somebody doesn't say, okay, time to download the app, because your phone is going to narc on you. If you get COVID-19, your phone will tell everybody you've been in contact with over the last few days. They won't say your name. They'll just say, somebody you've been in contact with has COVID-19. Go home and stay home for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Will you, let's ask Devendra, because I'm sure he's thought a little bit about this. Mm-hmm. Will you do that? Install it?
Completely. Completely. It is like the one thing, you know, we've had crises as a country for a while, and it's asked so much of us. All we need to do is stay home.
It's a lot easier than going to Iwo Jima.
Stay home. We don't have to go work in the rubber factories to produce stuff for the war effort. Just stay home. Like, I'm gonna enable this, and we're gonna talk about this effort too between Apple and Google. This is astounding. Like, this to me is the best of the technology industry. We criticize these companies all the time for privacy issues, but I love how this is a privacy-focused effort from the start. This isn't a government database. This isn't a centralized database. All this information's anonymous. It's not being shared with Apple or Google. I believe you guys linked to Chrissy Farr's piece at CNBC about how this all came together. It's astounding. Like, this is great. This is how we use tech to save the world, basically.
Yeah, this was a great piece. It was codenamed Bubble at Apple. Not sure what that means. At least it's not Bubbles, because that would have been weird. In mid-March, a small team at Apple started brainstorming how they could help. They knew that smartphones would be key to the global coronavirus response, particularly as countries started relaxing their shelter-in-place orders to prepare for that. Contact tracing within a few weeks, that's how fast they did this. The Apple project, codenamed Bubble, had dozens of employees working on it. Craig Federighi, a senior vice president of software engineering, and Jeff Williams, the COO at Apple, both supporting this effort. By the end of the month, Google had joined in, putting aside any... Remember, Apple was suing Google for like 20 years, it seems like. Nope, putting aside any animosity. Tim Cook and Sundar Pichai met on Zoom to give their final approval. Well, they probably didn't use Zoom. They did use Zoom because it's neutral, right?
It was just a long email chain. No, we got to do FaceTime. No, we got to do Hangouts.
Back and forth.
Pretty impressive. Now, a lot of people are very concerned about privacy. Steve Gibson, our security guy, went through all the white papers. He seems very comfortable with it. And if you look at what other governments have proposed, absent the use of this API, it's pretty horrific. Australia, France, absolute grab for data.
Every database is bad.
Alex, will you do it?
I will, out of a sense of civic duty, and my privacy concerns have been allayed by watching the federal government try to get its act together in the last couple of months. And so instead of being concerned that they're going to suck all this data down and use it nefariously, I don't think they're going to be able to do it too much with it, just given that they can't really
give
even
it to
find
Jared. He will do something with it. Actually, no, it would be legitimate to worry about a data breach, but they are not going to get any data that could be.
Yeah. The companies aren't touching the data. It's all happening on device, which
on
is
device.
Great.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now that you know that, hackers? Shira, would you do it?
I mean, I think I would do it out of civic duty and responsibility as well. I don't get a lot out of rebelling against it. I think there will be a lot of people that try to make a point by doing that because of privacy. I just think at this point, it's like there's more that you get to work on with yourself than to like just focus on that necessarily.
So the Singapore government, which is an authoritarian government, released a similar app, probably without privacy protection. Yeah. Only 25% of the populace used it.
Also the worst kind of design for that. Wasn't that the one where they had to have the phones open?
Yeah.
And the app running, like there was no background.
Killed your
work.
Battery.
Like
it was,
Yeah, that
not
makes
the way
sense.
To do it.
Don't you think at this point you could be found anywhere at any time anyway? Like if you don't have a phone.
Well,
like,
somebody made a point that Apple and Google have created an API for something ad trackers have been using for years.
Exactly.
Anyway. But at least theirs is private. The Singapore thing is called Trace Together. Uses the Bluetooth. Trace Together.
Let's make it all very
Let's
positive.
Make it together.
And
it uses Bluetooth. If there's a strong signal, people are close. And then if the person is identified with coronavirus, Singapore's Ministry of Health has the app data. They can look it up and they can notify people. But it had to be running in the foreground. And, of course, Apple doesn't let you run stuff in the foreground all the time. It also meant the phone had to stay unlocked. And it killed the battery. So a lot of complaints on that. This will be a lot better. Apple and Google both said, we will deliver our own app down the road, way down the road. We're really creating this API for public health officials to create an app. Have you heard of anybody? Is there a California app? Is there a U.S. app?
Oh.
I haven't heard about anything.
I think the only way this could work, I think that if these companies want access to where we are at all times, and we all want that to keep ourselves safer, I think we need to live in true transparency. So if we finally get comfortable citizens with full transparency, then all these companies should be transparent in terms of how they're building these things and give access to everyone, so people can break it down. And
that's what Apple has done. It's not open source,
but hack into it to like take advantage, but to be able to see what they're doing in real time with it.
I think Apple has the white papers Apple and Google have delivered have in a very detailed way described what they're doing and why they feel like it's privacy protective. But you're right, it's not open source. But I think we have to at some point trust certainly at least Apple to do the right thing with this. It would be such a
They're
breach.
The one company that's been like, preaching and actually doing the whole privacy focused thing compared to other companies. So yeah, I'm down with it. And you look at the process of this thing, like there's a key that changes on your device. Like it's even if somebody hacked your phone, it seems like it would be really difficult to track like other people who you've been in contact with. You won't know who it is. You'll just know, you touched a person. You were within range, and that's it.
And that's all you need to know. You don't need another name. You just need to know that you now have to quarantine for 14 days.
So, that makes sense.
Yeah. And you cannot send out that alert unless there's a security that says, you know, that can't be spoofed. You have to get a test. It has to be positive. And then the medical authorities will give you a QR code or mechanism so that you can't say, I got it if you didn't.
I will say, like, this whole thing is, like, the one step forward that has made me feel a little better about our state, the state of the world, and certainly the state of the U.S. right now, because in a couple of months, I plan to move from New York to Georgia. That was my plan for, like, the past year, and Georgia is having its own issues right now. New York is the hot spot. Moving a baby and two cats and my wife and all of our stuff.
You
can do it, but it's going to be very difficult. And having something like this to just be like, okay, maybe we were near somebody or something. We will try to fly down. Hopefully that's safer in a month or two. So there's a lot to worry about. This is like a step forward because a vaccine is far off. Other solutions are far off. This is something.
Right. I'm actually going to Quest tomorrow to get an antibody test. They are available.
I made an appointment for that.
Did you?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with the information? Because I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing. I kind of was like, after I did it, I was like, why did I do that again? It was
more it's like not proven. It's not control. Proven that you
can't
that you're
change
immune.
Your behavior or anything.
I know.
But
I
so
think
at least,
it's more, it's perception. It's like it gives us the I'll feeling be a little like reassured. We know more or we have some sort of control over the scenario.
Lisa, it all comes because Lisa, my wife, was deathly ill all through the month of January. We think she got it in, we were in Reno on New Year's Eve. There are probably a lot of travelers there as well. She came home, was sick. She went, I feel bad now in hindsight, she went to CES. She stayed in her room when she wasn't feeling well, but she did some stuff at CES. She went around. We came home. She was still sick, went through a couple of courses of antibiotics, had many of the symptoms of COVID-19 and recovered, but it took 4 weeks.
Wow.
I did not get sick, even though, you know, we share a bed, we share a home, I cook, we cook, you know. I didn't kiss her a lot, but I kissed her a little.
I'm glad she's better, Leo. And I'm surprised, like, given the timing of this thing, that CES wasn't a huge hotspot.
Well, this is like, one thing that's interesting. Yeah. We now know that some people with COVID did go to CES. And so there is some concern that maybe it was more of a vector than we knew at the time.
We're just used to getting sick after CES, so everyone was like, whatever.
That's true. Yeah, people thought it was a CES sickness.
But that just shows you how dangerous it is. If anybody's sick at CES, we all get it. Right?
There's that. And also, I'm always extra vigilant at CES, too. Like, I don't touch anybody. I'm always using hand sanitizer. Like, that's an area where I'm just very careful compared to
I wash my hands a lot anyway.
So maybe that helped.
CES crud. And I did not get sick at CES, even though a lot of my colleagues did. Anyway, so Lisa's going to get the antibody test because she's curious. And I'm curious since I live with her and I didn't get sick. Did I get it and not know? And then my son, who came back from Asia at the end of March and quarantined himself, did get sick in the 10th day or the 8th day of the quarantine.
Oh.
So I think he probably did have it. So he's going to get the test too. So, but again, if you test like, you had it, then what do you do? Is it, it doesn't
necessarily.
Because
it's not proven that you can't get it again.
Right.
Like that's the
thing. It's more than if you know how sick you were, you're like, oh, maybe it's not as scary.
Right.
Like if you get it again, then you're like, oh, I know how my body reacted last time.
Maybe I'm immune. Maybe I got it and it didn't, maybe I was one of those silent spreaders. I don't know. Nobody here has it. We closed the studio to a studio audience. When did we do that, John? End of February, I think. And then as soon as the shelter in place for California happened, March 17th, we stopped having people come into the studio except for me and a skeleton crew. I don't know. I'm hoping. We'll see. I hope you're all taking care of yourself, everybody, and you stay well.
I'll try.
Yeah. So, I think I would put this app on my phone. Even if it were a privacy violation, I think it's our duty.
Yes.
But I feel like since it's Apple and Google, I'm going to feel pretty confident about that. It is a good story. Read the CNBC story about how it came together. It's pretty cool. Apparently, Apple is also, according to CNBC, trying to make your phone easier to unlock if you're wearing a mask.
I saw this.
This is in beta 3 of iOS 13.5. Instead of waiting for the phone to go, I don't know who the hell you are. You can swipe up and get the codes, but it really was. It really does now highlight what a poor choice Face ID was.
Touch ID is so good. I have two iPhones.
Yeah.
I have an iPhone 7 personal and a work iPhone. One has touch, one has face, and touch is just so much better.
It's
fast. It's not perfect, but my gosh, is it lovely.
Yeah.
No matter what I'm wearing.
Yeah. Let's see. Did you try the new Pixel Buds, Devendra? Do you like them?
I did not. Billy Steele at Engadget reviewed them and he really likes them. So that's like a step forward for them.
They were my favorite. The originals were my choice for Bluetooth earbuds. They were as good as the most expensive ones and they were cheap.
Huh.
They were $100.
Yeah.
I thought they were very good. They fit well. The bass was good. The audio quality was good. I really liked the Google Buds. I mean, the Samsung Buds. But they didn't
have
any.
Samsung Buds are different. Yeah, the last Pixel Buds.
Oh, no. You're right. I was talking about the Samsung Buds.
Yes.
I love the Samsung Buds. The Google Buds were awful.
Yep.
Those are the ones with the string behind you. They look like a little croaky holding your glasses on.
Which I don't mind. I don't mind the string. And that's one thing I kind of miss now that we're going to true wireless earbuds. Like the Beats X were my favorite for a while because that's something to hold it around your neck. You know, if you have an earbud and you have to take it off when we were going to stores, the best thing you could do is shove it in your pocket. Hope you have the case, but that's an easy way to forget it. Throw your pants in the wash and, you know,
or if you're Shira,
through the laundry.
No laundry. I'm just teasing you.
By the way, I've had AirPods. I've had so many that I've lost and then
two
got stolen. I've almost given up. Because I feel like I've spent over $1,000 on them. Like,
this is these companies, it's a great way for companies to earn more revenue. But as somebody who cares about the longevity of consumer electronics, it sucks. It's not
very
great.
Disappointing. Yeah, because if the battery dies, there's no fix really. Or do they?
You drop them on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
It was one of them.
Just a preview, next week, Xbox Series X gameplay will be, I guess there's no E3. Yeah. Are you excited, Alex? Are you're getting down, man.
I'm excited because I'm going to be indoors a lot, and so I've actually been upgrading my gaming setups, and I would love an excuse to convince my wife to let me buy another console. And so if it's awesome, I'm going to be like, honey, look, I have to play the thing.
It's a great time for gaming.
People.
Honey, it's part of my job. I want to play Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2. I want to play it, honey.
She would know it's not part of my job, but she did let me buy a gaming racing sim setup for my house. So now I can do F1 racing on my PC, and it's so much fun. I'm having a blast.
We're thinking maybe we should stream this. Should we stream this, you think? I think we should. May 7th, 11 a.m. Eastern time. That means 8 a.m. for me.
It's going to look like a gaming PC.
Yeah.
That's going to be our surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. ladies and gentlemen, I think we could wrap this up. I'm sure everybody's a little hungry. I have had so much fun hanging out with you guys. Shira, it's so great to see you. I'm so proud of what you're doing. I think Peace Inside is an amazing thing. Everybody should check it out. It's just what we need in this time.
I appreciate it. We have so many ideas, and it's cool to work on something that's so connected to things that I love, like in my daily life, which is... It's rare because we all start doing our work, you know, and we do the things where you think we're supposed to be doing. Like, you knew me from tech stuff, from pop culture stuff.
Right.
And it's cool to see now I'm using the things I've learned in those worlds, now bringing it to a space that I love, and I use these tools daily myself. So, yeah, it feels very aligned.
You always were pretty enlightened. I think that it's...
I don't know if I would say that, but thank you.
No, you are. You know what? It's funny, but part of your enlightenment is not saying... I am a perfect being. Part of your enlightenment is saying I'm a real human, and that is enlightened to me. And you're very warm and enveloping and loving. And I think this is this is your time. So I'm really glad you're doing what you're doing. I hope you're enjoying your quarantine. Keep up the good work.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to see you. Alex, I don't know what to say except I miss rubbing your head. and
it's shaved nice and close right now for you, Leah, so.
It looks good. I miss you too. I've never had more fun with you in studio, sober or drunk, but I'm glad you're on the sober side this time. It's really wonderful to see you, and you're doing well, and you're Alex on Twitter, which is the premium title. Took him a lot of time to get it, so enjoy it. Follow him on Twitter. Read him on TechCrunch. Anything, and don't forget, it's time to listen to that podcast. What's it called?
Oh, it's called Equity. If you're into finance and startups. Equity. But I'll just say this, Leo. Eventually the world's going to get a bit more normal, and I will be back in SF, and I'll be back in the studio, and then you can rub my head again.
I
will bring it back.
Do you all feel like, gosh, I just can't wait to hug some people? Do you feel like that?
Yes.
I'm just dying.
I'm a hugger. Trust me, I'm a hugger. But I just want to be able to go to people's, the dating. I'm single, so it's a bit of a different experience.
Do you date?
No. I mean, there was one person that I was kind of maybe seeing. But
it's boring. You got to FaceTime each other. I mean,
I think there's ways then to build the romance and the attraction in a different way than we're used to, which I think is awesome. But I haven't gotten into the place where I'm open to actually dating or meeting a lot of people because it feels like such a distraction. How many people can you text at once? I have other things to do. Or FaceTime
with. But people are using Tinder a lot, I think. Tinder's going through the roof. But I don't know.
Hinge, all of them. I mean,
Hinge? What's Hinge?
Hinge is another dating app.
I'm on Unhinged, so it's good. But
is it you and Elon Musk?
Yeah, Unhinge. I'm on Unhinge. It must be weird if you're single
It is an interesting time. Yeah, because then, and then you're connecting with people for a moment. Like there'll be one or two days you talk and then you're like, meh. Too tired. Like this isn't going anywhere. Like I'm not gonna. You might. People have asked me to social distance hang, which is like.
I don't
so they'll
do
be like,
that.
We'll walk. We'll take a walk. But I'm like, I don't know.
That's worse because they're so close and yet so far. Oh, you're really cute, but stand over there. Well, Alex, you got your honey with you, and I'm really glad to hear that, and a nice dog, and a big yard, and your Xbox. What more could anyone want?
I'm okay. I went to the grocery store today. I'm stocked up for a week. I'll be literally in this chair until next Sunday when I go do that again. Nice. So
nice. Maybe I'll send you over to visit my mom. She's getting a little lonely over there in Cranston. And Devendra Hardawar, he's there with his wife, his baby, but you know what?
Yep.
This is a special time. You're going to look back on this and say, I got to be with her at this special age. You'll never forget this. I'm telling you, take a lot of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be very grateful.
That's the key.
Yeah.
It's weird, though, that I'm seeing less of the baby because I'm doing more work at the home office. So it is strange. It is strange how that's all working out. But I'm trying to take advantage of the best we can from this time.
Hey, at least you're working, right?
Yeah. I'm working. I'm going to be grateful for that. And also check out the Engadget podcast, which is another thing I'm working on.
Absolutely.
We just chatted with Greg Daniels, by the way, the creator of Upload on Amazon. And that guy.
Oh, I want to watch that. Is that good?
It's so good. I think you would find it a blast.
It looks really cool. I'm trying to do is ration, because I know we're going to get 6 months from now. There's nothing, because nothing's being produced. What does it take, a year? Maybe a year from now? Nothing.
There are some big binges. There are some big shows that nobody has seen that I want to recommend to everybody. So when you're ready, Leo,
I'm ready.
Me know.
Tell me now. Yeah. Don't leave us
hanging. The Good Wife.
That's good.
The Good Wife.
The Good Wife is fantastic. Yeah. And the successor to The Good Wife.
Yep. The Good Fight.
The Good Fight. I love her. But The Good Wife, they had a lot of stuff. They had Bitcoin. They had a lot of technology stuff in The Good Wife. I thought that was a very good show.
Yeah, and Good Fight has, like, Jonathan Coulton songs breaking down, all sorts of fun stuff. Like, it's so geeky, and nobody realizes it because it's on CBS, and they think it's a stodgy, you know, show for parents or something.
You know what else nobody realizes? Westworld's finale's tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't watch season two.
Season two is bad. This season is fun because they kind of just give
up
on the
mess. But can you figure out what's going on?
Enough.
I can't. I'm watching it. I feel like an old man. Who's that? What's he doing there? What? Why'd he kill her? I don't.
It's so pretty. It's so pretty. And the sci-fi world is so wild. Like, that's, I love that stuff.
It's,
and they shot that in Singapore, too. Like, the future city.
I know. Yeah. Singapore and the place that we were last year, Valencia, Spain, the beautiful architectural creations. That's the headquarters of the Westworld company is in Valencia, Spain. So they mixed that with Singapore. It's very interesting.
Did you do that dinner, Leo, at CES? Because Insight is the company. They had like a promo
Insight,
dinner.
Insight, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was wild. Like that introduced me to this new season.
No, it's probably why I didn't get sick. What else? Anything else, Devendra? You want to share anything else we should watch?
I mean, that's it. Check out the Engadget podcast. I reviewed Upload on Engadget too, so
good.
Go read
that. Devs is good. If you haven't watched that, that's on Hulu. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to be really careful. I don't want to squander.
You know, there's too much good stuff. So I think you're fine. You know, go with your heart.
Maybe we won't run out. Shira, you don't seem like the type that watches anything.
You know what? I have been. When I'm in a relationship with someone, I am. These days, I haven't been because I've been working on Peace Inside Live. My co-founder's in Thailand.
Wow.
So she's stuck in the middle of the night.
Yeah, she's the other side of the world.
It's daytime, so that's when I get to catch up with her and work through stuff. So I haven't been watching as much as I typically do, which is really strange. Like, I have not gone through one series, like, except Tiger King I did check out.
It does tell you, though, how much of that is all about romance. It's Netflix and chill. It's like a thing to cuddle and watch. And then you can yell at your partner when they get ahead of you and they say, you weren't supposed to watch that.
I watched The Goonies and I watched The Matrix. Like, I'm doing throwback.
Yeah.
Watching.
Yeah, I've been doing some throwback stuff. But for me, it's like W.C. Fields and the Bank Dick. So it's a different kind of throwback. Hey, everybody. You guys are great. It was really a pleasure. Thank you for being here on Twit in the middle of May. It's May. It's May. Outdoor fooling around begins today.
Oh, boy.
Tomorrow. Yeah, nobody, right? Nobody's doing that. Yesterday was naked gardening day. I didn't see one naked gardener because I was inside.
I didn't know that.
Missed it.
You didn't talk about the killer hornets. Can we?
Do you want to talk about the killer hornets? There's not really much tech there.
It's weird.
It's terrifying.
What is going on?
They're up in Washington State. Uh-huh. Their sting is so long because they're 2 inches long and powerful. It goes right through a bee suit. And then they said it feels like molten metal being injected into your skin. And they came, I guess they came from Asia. We're not sure how they got here. But here's the worst part. This is definitely a sci-fi movie. They have giant pinchers, and the way they make their living is they go around to bee colonies and chop everybody's head off and bring the body back to the colony for feeding.
There's some great slow-mo video of this online. It's
horrible.
Yeah.
This is the end of the world because don't we need bees to survive? Like, bees are a huge part of our ecosystem.
Yes.
And so is this the beginning of the end? Like, or the plagues are starting?
Could be.
Like,
this is one of the plagues.
It's another cap on our milestone towards the end.
If it starts raining frogs, Shira, repent. That's all I'm saying.
There are locust plagues currently in parts of the world. So if we're tracking plagues, we are already kind of on step three of this. I'll just say I moved out of the Pacific Northwest a while ago. Right call, as it turns out, because that's where they are. And I'll pass on this one.
That's where they are. And because you spent a childhood watching Davy and Goliath, you know that we're going through Revelation right now. And this is the seven seals are about to be broken and it's all over.
What's really, really funny, I didn't bring this up earlier during the contact tracing app discussion, but I bet you there's certain subgroups of Christianity who think this is like the mark of the beast. And there's a lot of crossover between tech solutions, monitoring, and Pentecostal Christianity. So there's going to be some of that coming up. You'll see it on Twitter. It's going to be a mess.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. You know what?
Sorry for bringing bad news.
We're going to get the sane people here next week, and we'll do another nice conversation. And try to stay sane during this crazy time. That was not a dry cough. I thank you all for being here. We really appreciate it. We need you for to continue doing these shows because it'd be silly for us to sit around just talking to nobody. So thank you for watching. We do tweet every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. The live audio and video streams are at twit.tv/live. After the fact, I know that's a terrible. I should do
some water. Water.
At the end of the day, my throat. I've been talking all day. I have water, but I'd prefer to chug a lug some sanitizer. Where's that? Oh well. What was I saying? Oh yes, you can get on demand shows at twit.tv. All of our shows are there at twit.tv, on YouTube as well. You can ask your Amazon Echo or your Google Voice. You can say, Echo, play Twit Live to listen to the live part, or play This Week in Tech to listen to the most recent episode, that kind of thing. My favorite way for you to participate, though, is to subscribe. All of our shows really live or die by the subscription. So pick your favorite podcast app and subscribe. That way you'll get the show the minute it's available. Of a Sunday night, just in time for your morning commute from the bedroom to the bathroom. Thank you. You can listen to bits at a time. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Bye-bye.